It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott's in Mexico City. Richard Campbell is in New Zealand. He'll join us a little bit late. He's actually driving as fast as he can to get back to his studio and his house. We've got lots to talk about. It's a big AI show. No new versions of Windows this week, but there is a lot of Copilot news, especially in Edge. Why Firefox is fighting so hard to stay alive. And, of course, more earnings and Xbox news, too. Plus, some tips of the week, an app of the week, and a brown liquor pick of the week. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Richard Campbell. Episode 867. Recorded Wednesday, February 7th, 2024. Prepare the double box. This episode of Windows Weekly is brought to you by CashFly. For over 20 years, CashFly has held a track record for high-performing, ultra-reliable content delivery, serving over 5,000 companies in over 80 countries. Organizations consistently choose CashFly for scalability, reliability, and unrivaled performance. With CashFly, you get ultra-low latency video streaming, which delivers video to over a million concurrent users. Lightning-fast gaming that delivers downloads faster with zero lag, glitches, or outages. Mobile content optimization, offering automatic and simple image optimization so your site loads faster on any device. Flexible month-to-month billing for as long as you need, and discounts for fixed terms once you're happy. Design your contract when you switch to CashFly. With CashFly's elite managed packages, you'll get the VIP treatment. Your dedicated account manager will be with you from day one, ensuring a smooth implementation and reliable 24/7 support when you need it. Delivering rich media content up to 159% faster than other major CDNs, join CashFly, the world's fastest CDN. Jumpstart your journey with CashFly with a complimentary first month, or give it a whirl with a free 5 terabyte account. Simply go to cashfly.com/twit. That's CashFly, CacheFly.com/twit. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we get together and with Paul and Richard and talk about Windows and Microsoft stuff, except Richard is stuck in the air somewhere over New Zealand, I guess. Hi, Paul.
Hello, Leo.
Yeah, Paul's in Mexico City, though. I could tell from the colorful couch pillows.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping by the end of this trip I'll have colorful walls as well. We're working on that.
Yeah, that's the last thing you do. First you get comfy, right? Then you put stuff on the walls.
It's a little stark.
Yeah, it's pretty. What is that window behind you look out onto the street?
No, it looks out onto the penthouse across the way.
Oh, that's the one I want to rent.
So unfortunately, it's been purchased.
Oh, nuts.
Yeah.
I wanted to flash
you. The good
news
is the guy who bought it is really nice.
And oh, good.
Hanging out a lot,
so. Oh, nice. He's Americano? Gringo, as they say?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Are you surrounded by expats?
No. No, we're kind of in the far southeastern corner of Roma Norte. So if you walk north of here, it's like walking through Brooklyn, you know. But if you walk south of here, it's like walking through Medellin or something. I mean, nice. It's a completely different planet.
Good.
So we're kind of right on. We're kind of bridging those two worlds. So it's a nice location.
I'm so jealous. And I bet it's a little warmer than Macungie.
The low temperature here exceeds the high temperature in Macungie.
Yeah, that's what I figured. Although it's because you're at altitude,
mm-hmm.
It's not hot. Yeah, it's like a 70s, right? Low 70s.
It's in the 70s. Well, it's been high 70s lately. Nice. It's going to get down to low 70s, but at night it actually gets into the high 40s, like at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah,
but we walked home last night at 9:30 and it was 65.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Beautiful.
Oh, so jealous. And not to mention the food that you were probably eating. God. Do you ever cook?
No. like literally no.
Why would you? Why would
and we
you?
Eat, you know, when we're home, we eat, you know, 5-6 days a week, most meals at home, right? I mean, it's the complete opposite here. There's just no reason to.
Well, it's inexpensive and it's amazing.
Yeah. A lunch costs us $3.50. I don't think I could.
Right.
Deliver a reasonable lunch at that price at home.
Right.
You know,
And then you have to shop and cook and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so jealous. All right. Well, I'll try to contain.
You can do this. You can do this.
Yeah.
Well, it's here for everybody. Power todos.
Yeah. There's things. There's impediments. If it were, you know,
Leo, blink twice if you're talking about your wife.
It's, there's the wife, there's the cat, there's my kids, and there's this darn thing called Twit. But all of them combine to kind of have me.
There's a word for that. I think it's responsibility.
Responsibility. Yeah. There's a word. But you, it's the spring awakening, my friends. He is footloose and fancy free.
I don't have to do what you have to do, right? Yeah. I just have to show up for a thing like this, so I can work from anywhere.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
You know, Father, I wouldn't even, no one would even know.
No one would know. Anything. No one would know.
Yeah.
I'm starting to think that is the case also with me.
Yeah, why not?
Why not? I just get a green screen. You'd never know.
Right.
Father Robert told me I could move to live in the Vatican.
Yeah.
They have, so he lives in the
Jesuit. As people do.
One does. Apparently somebody did. There's a Jesuit house. He lives in the Jesuit house. It's in Vatican City. It's overlooking St. Peter's Square. Mm-hmm. And he says, we have 19 guest rooms. I said, do they care about, how long you stay? He said, there's a guy who moved in during COVID and hasn't moved out yet. I don't know.
Yeah. Interesting.
Plus, Robert's built an entire podcast studio, better than this, probably, knowing Robert.
Yeah.
Up on top of the thing. So.
Hmm.
And there's lots of cats there. Anyway, let's, nobody cares about this. This is a. This is
the I care of, about this. I don't know.
I know you and I do. But this is the personal kind of discussion that people really hate.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And in the I don't know if that's the case. But in the early days of the show, I always said, we're here. We don't want to waste our listeners' time. So let's get right into it. But now that we do 3-hour shows, we're clearly wasting our listeners' time. So
we're wasting our time.
Everybody's
what
time.
We're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you may be wondering, where's that other guy? Where is he?
Let me see. He's in New Zealand. He's in New Zealand. And he's been texting me. Let me see if I can find this. This is funny. Rob was eating lunch today. He's crazy. He says, 2.5-hour drive. Show starts in an hour. I'm not going to make it. Still haven't left the rental car place. I'm like, I'm sorry. It's no big deal. Don't worry. Who cares? You're traveling. And then he says, I could just pull over and do it from the car. Like, dude.
No.
Just don't. Just take the week off. It's good. You know? I half expected him just to show, from a windswept seaside villa.
He's done that before. Remember, he did that from the airport
a
couple months ago. He just showed up.
He's very dedicated. He's too dedicated.
Yeah. He's actually put in his notes for brown liquor and everything. But
because he was on the road, I actually added the notes for his podcast pick for him. But he didn't tell me the name of the liquor pick. I would have added that as well. But I see he has added that.
But we'll save
that. I can't speak to that.
Yeah.
We'll mention his podcast pick because it's timely. But maybe my wife's on a work call now, but maybe I can convince her to grab a cocktail.
She works while she's there too, huh?
Yeah.
So you're really it's kind of cool. I mean, this is the modern age, capable of doing everything you would do in PA,
right?
In MXC.
So, all right, since you mentioned that, I will just say, I don't know how I write this up or whatever, but I have so many memories related to travel that are technology related, right? There was the time I was going to Amsterdam and the night before I was switching the SIM card out of my phone and it popped out of my hand, fell further into the couch and then got into a place where I couldn't reach it. And I needed it for connectivity. This is probably 10 years ago. My wife comes home with my daughter. They walk through the door. And what they see is me on top of an upside down couch with a saw cutting through the bottom of the couch. And she's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I can't go to Amsterdam without this SIM card, you know? So flash forward to today. If somebody stole my phone and I didn't have a phone, I could buy one here. I could get an eSIM instantaneously and be online.
Yeah.
4G, 5G, whatever.
Yeah.
No problem. And then contrast these two experiences with the first year the iPhone came out and I was in Paris. And I was scared to death to turn that thing on because there were all these stories about those people coming back with the giant paper bills. And this was the year.
I remember that. First, when it first came out.
The iPhone 1.0 had no sense of location or roaming or anything.
It would do international.
It would just be on or off.
Expensive.
Yeah. So I was scared to death to use this thing. And that was the same summer that Paris started doing public Wi-Fi in the parks. So I tried every single one of them. They were all terrible. But you know, you compare the situation back then, and eventually you could pay AT&T a ton of money for a really small amount of data. To you have something like Google Fi where you can just kind of travel internationally, don't worry about it. But you know, it's $10 per gig, whatever. And then today, I just have unlimited. Nobody cares. Like it's just boop, on, no problem. You know, those things really just have changed my life. So it's made this kind of thing possible, right? It's one of the things that makes what I'm doing now, you know, no big deal.
It's really
the internet connection here is as fast as the one I have.
Oh, yeah.
It's a gig. You know,
I mean, I think back to when we started and I was fighting, you know, Skype flaws. I'd spend hours editing the shows. We've come a long way, baby.
No, it's incredible. And I know people here don't think this, but I complain a lot, right? And this is one of those kind of the flip side of the coin, right? It's healthy to remember that for as terrible as things can be, for all of the insurification stuff we talk about, and I think we're going to be talking about some of that today, actually, there have been these advances, you know. This to me is just the big.
It's remarkable.
Huge. It's awesome.
It's totally remarkable. Yeah, we do take it for granted. That's that famous Louis C.K. bit where he talks about flying in an airplane.
You're going, it's one of my favorite.
It's
what are you for? The you know, like flying through the air.
My food. I want my food. It's so terrible. And you're
He's like, it's bouncing off a satellite. Give it a second.
It's
you know,
a miracle.
It's beautiful.
Really, we live in amazing times. Yeah. It's good once in a while to pause and remember that.
Yeah.
And then for me to feel insanely jealous that you're in Mexico City right now.
Well, like I said, I mean, this is, I'm not at the, you know, the Grand Hotel or anything. I'm in a 700 square foot cement box.
You're in your flat. You're in your own personal flat with your own clothes and your own bedding and your own. By the way, as you know, some of our audience, just a little bit OCD.
And well, I'm right there with you.
Yeah, and they're noticing that spot over your left shoulder. I think that's a thermostat.
Yep. I will tell you, I focused on that the second I turned the camera on. What that is a hook.
Okay.
For a jacket or whatever.
Oh, and all right. Put a jacket on there. Would you put a hat on it next time?
Leo, listen, I am way ahead of you. When we got home from lunch, when we left, there was a jacket hanging there. And I thought to myself, you know what? Maybe that's going to make it okay. And then we got back from lunch and I turned on the camera. And I was like, where's the jacket? And I think my wife
she's cleaned thought, up.
I'll get it out of the, you know, the video.
She tidied it up.
Yeah. No, believe me, I'm like staring at it.
I asked.
People are going to wait for it to slowly start moving across the wall like it's a tarantula or something.
They're not sure because it's so hard to see. It's kind of like it might be a dot on the camera. But now that you
know, it's a circular hook for
see
a,
that it's a
jacket.
Hook. Yeah. Hey, when Stephanie, bring us a hat.
I need a jacket and a cocktail.
jacket and cocktail. The title already, I can't. A pith helmet.
It's like the beginning of a David Lee Roth video. Yeah. Give me a jacket and a cocktail to go.
Send lawyers, guns, and money. Windows Radio Silence from the Insider Program all this week. What happened?
Yeah, we usually have some news about stuff that happened in the Insider Program last week, right, the previous week. And this week, this past week, we've only gotten the one build, and it was in the beta channel, and it's just bug fixes. So the thing is, the only thing you need to know about this is if you are testing the beta build, you're going to want to download this update because it actually fixes a bunch of serious problems. And you have to have that switch, right, in Windows Update on, you know, I want updates early. But there's nothing, there's no new features. So for the rest of the world, I get nothing to tell you.
That's it.
That's all we have from the Insider Program. But we do have a bunch of Windows news.
Okay.
Fortunately.
And it's AI Windows news as it has been all this year, and, pretty much.
And right? then more AI. Yeah. I'm in the middle of writing an article. 1 year ago yesterday, I wrote an article called This is Windows 12. And the only thing I got wrong was the name. But the this coming big update for Windows, which is kind of all AI related, it's kind of fascinating to look back a year later and see what has transpired, because I don't think, even as crazy as it seemed last February when Microsoft announced this Bing with AI and all this stuff, a year later, it's no one would have anticipated this level of update release, you know, rebrand. I mean, it's been a crazy year. And we'll get to that in a moment. But one of the things that came out of that was Copilot in Windows. And I actually think we have a branding problem here, because there's, you know, there's Copilot is the Microsoft brand for their generative AI functionality. But
it was first in GitHub. That was the first time. And then it made sense because it was your programming partner. It was your Copilot as you wrote code.
Yeah. And actually, somebody asked me about that late last week. And there's something interesting about Copilot for GitHub, and that's that it's not that expensive. It's only $10 per month per user.
Interesting.
Copilot Pro for Microsoft account holders is $20 per month per user. And then it's more typical to see, you know, ChatGPT Plus or Copilot in Microsoft 365 is $30 per user per month. And the reason is the Copilot model, the thing that they're learning against, the data set that they work against, is so much smaller, right? It's finite. It's literally a set of programming related topics, right? So that when you cut down on what this thing needs to learn, you can actually save a lot of money. And that's why Copilot in Windows is free, because it does literally nothing.
Interesting.
It's terrible. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, but
it should be free, is what you're saying.
Right. You get what you pay for, is what I'm saying.
Are they using, which model are they using? 3.5, 3.5 of ChatGPT?
No. So, yeah, it's 4, and then 4 Turbo or 4.5 Turbo, whatever.
Yeah, that's a smaller set. Yeah.
But it depends on whether you're paying or not, right? And so, as part of the rebranding, as they did, not counting Copilot, I mean, forget about GitHub for a moment, but the rest of the Copilot branded products and services Microsoft has are all using that same Copilot base. And it is on the latest version of ChatGPT, although they'll meter it if you're not paying, obviously, and maybe even bump it down to 3.5, depending on how busy things are at the time or whatever. You get precedence when you pay. But they're really confusing matters a lot, because we have this notion of, as part of the rebranding, there's Microsoft Copilot, but there's Copilot. There's somebody in Discord added a jacket to the.
That's what we need.
It's good. The jacket that was there was not that big, but it's
thank God for Photoshop is all I'm saying. Here we go. Just put a little jacket on that hook and,
Like I'm describing Brad Sams right there. Anywho, I don't know where that came from. So
that's really mean. And I'm not going to tell Brad you said that. Don't worry.
This is how men interact. I'm sorry. We're terrible to each other. So I forgot what I was talking about. The basis of Microsoft Copilot is the same everywhere, right? There's free and paid versions, obviously. But we're getting, there's no, it used to be Microsoft 365 Copilot. It used to be Windows Copilot, right? Now it's Copilot in these products. So even in the confines of something like Microsoft 365, we're going to have something called Copilot in OneDrive soon. And it's like, guys, I think we're getting a little weird here, because these things all have unique functionality, et cetera, or at least they can. The Copilot in Windows, as we call it, is not particularly interesting, because the unique functionality there is not very good. It's just related to a handful of settings.
Make me a Spotify playlist. So you can't ask it stuff. You can't say, you know, what's...
No, you can. It does the basic... It does do what Copilot does, right? Okay. You can say, make me a picture of a painting in the style of whatever, and you can do all that stuff.
Yeah. So is that what you used for those amazing Master Chief paintings that you did?
Yeah. So what I'm using is, I pay for Copilot Pro, which is the consumer version, $20 per month, right? So sometime in the past, I don't know, 2 weeks or so, they added that into Copilot in Windows. So I don't do it that way. I don't actually like the sidebar, but
it knows you bought it. So it has
that. It does. It says Pro. It knows I did that. Yeah. So one of the things that just changed was they did that for people who subscribe to Copilot in Microsoft 365. So same thing with Pro. If you do subscribe and pay for the Microsoft 365 version and you access it through the sidebar, it knows that. It will give you the little logo so you can tell that you're getting it. And you can do whatever you want to do through there. So actually, that's cool. Pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, so far, I would say the biggest or best functionality in Copilot in Microsoft 365 is the app-based stuff. You know, you go into Microsoft Word, for example, and it helps you write and all that. I you don't really do that from the sidebar, but I think that's kind of cool.
It's funny that $20 seems to be the going rate for a pro subscription. That's what OpenAI charges. It's what I'm using Perplexity now because you made me start using the Arc browser.
Yeah. So like to explain Perplexity. What Perplexity is, though, this is an LLM from, it's like open source.
It's an interesting, I think I like it. I'll explain. So yeah. it is a front end to AI. But it doesn't have to be any particular AI. So you can use a variety of models, including ChatGPT-4. Mm-hmm.
Does it pass through your capabilities based on whether you pay for it or not?
Yeah, I guess. That's actually a good question. I haven't, because I have ChatGPT-4 through my OpenAI subscription. Yeah. So it's a little confusing.
Right.
So Perplexity will let you choose the model.
Okay.
I actually am not logged into Pro right now, so I'll
re-log.
Can you
model stack?
That would be cool. I'll have to play with it. It will do. Will let you do Google's, they call it Gemini now. It was Bard. Mm-hmm. It will let you do, I think, Anthropic's Claude. So there are a number of really good. So to kind of explain this, you know, we've talked about this before. There's these large language models, and there are many of them now. Meta open source their Llama 2. Apple has just released an open source LLM. So there are a lot of these around, and they have, I guess, you know, they're all trained on roughly this, I would guess, the same data, the internet as a whole, although that's a shrinking body of stuff they can access. And then they have additional tuning on top of that that makes them unique. One of the reasons I'm hesitant to cancel my OpenAI subscription is they have those GPTs. And you remember I've talked about this. I've made two GPTs, which I use all the time, one for the programming language I use and one for the editor I use. And they're references for me. They're fantastic. I cannot.
This is the Copilot thing, but writ small a little bit, right? I know one of yours is
better
Blitz,
because it doesn't hallucinate.
That's how it gets better.
One of the instructions I gave it was, and under no circumstances use anything that isn't in the corpus of works that I gave you. So I gave it, you know, dozens of PDFs of, you know, the nice thing about Lisp, the language I like, Common Lisp, is it's so old that everything's in the public domain. So I gave it all these classic. Yeah, I gave it all these classic Lisp books. Somebody sent me. So and then I'm trying to understand something called deterministic finite automata. Don't ask. But
I love the language.
Yeah. But Chocolate Milk Mini Sip sent me a textbook, I guess, PDF from when he was, years ago studying this, which I added. Now, all of a sudden, my Lisp AI, my Lisp expert, is also an expert in DFAs. And I can say, write me some Lisp, a DFA in Lisp, and it will do it.
But in Lisp, What's your second one? I know about the Lisp
Emacs.
One, but what's the other one? Emacs, okay.
Emacs, similarly, I put all the Emacs manual. This is a good example.
This is about keyboard shortcuts, essentially, right?
Well, it's also Emacs is kind of, some wag once said, an operating system with a kind of half decent
text editor in front of it.
Because it's written in Lisp itself, it's highly programmable. I mean, your Emacs, when you get it, can not only tell you what the moon thing is, it could, you know, the phase of the moon, it could tell you, it has a ELIZA built in, has games built in. It's got, because it's just really, it is like an operating system. But in order to use it effectively, you really need to know a lot. And so I took this is a good example. If you've got a bookshelf of manuals, whether it's for a car or plumbing or whatever, you can put this into that.
Yeah.
And then suddenly it is the expert. You don't have to flip through stuff. You could do this with Delphi.
This is going to be.
If you gave it your Delphi Bible.
Well, I wouldn't do it for Delphi, but I would do it for things like, you know, the history of Microsoft, just major milestones, dates, et cetera.
Perfect.
You know, I mean, this is probably months ago now, but for a long time, I've been talking about this notion of consumers not having the Microsoft graph, and that Microsoft is forcing OneDrive usage, is forcing Outlook usage, forcing Edge usage, not just for ads and, you know, that stuff, although that's definitely part of it. But also because they need to create something for consumers that's like the Microsoft graph. And I look at my own, I'm going to call it like work archive of documents, which I think is a couple hundred gigabytes or whatever. And it's 30 years of my writing, you know. And one of my weird problems, because I write so much, is I'll start writing on a topic and I'll think, I know I've written something about this. And I can't, my site search is terrible. I try to do that stuff. But yeah, just having something I go back and say, hey, what have I said about this? You know, or whatever. Or when did this happen? You know, that type of stuff. Super, super helpful.
So
this is coming. And,
oh,
you know,
it's amazing.
Your mechanic
it's
example is excellent because dating back to say the beginning of the iPod era, I remember a friend of mine wanting to get an iPod and wanting to buy music online and thinking to myself, this is how I can tell this is going mainstream, because this particular person, it was a good friend, but not technical in any way, not into the tech world. This has leached into the mainstream, right? And I think the thing you just described is going to be the moment. It's coming. It's going to come in like 2 days. It's when I go to my mechanic and he does what you just described, or you go to, you know, I'm trying to think of examples.
In your phone. So you can literally.
Yeah. You're under the car and you're like,
what is this thing?
What's the part for this thing? Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is not science fiction. This is not someday soon.
It's
like, this is,
I'm using it. That's what really turned me around on AI. By the way, I logged into Perplexity. So I have Perplexity Pro. Again, $20 a month. Everybody seems to settle on that, except Microsoft which is 30. I can choose the model, the Perplexity model. There's an experimental model, GPT-4, Claude 2.1, and Gemini Pro. So those are currently the models. I'll give you an example of some of the stuff. Like the other day, I was saying, well, can I power a Vision Pro through a battery pack? So I wanted to know, what's the wattage of PD, power delivery? Perfect answer. Gave me all the information. This is what I used to use Neva for. Gave me all the references. So I know it's not hallucinating this.
Well, and because you're limiting, it's not going out and Google searching and scraping.
Exactly.
Although,
it is. I think it is.
No, but it's doing a subset.
Right.
And I think that's the key to making AI more accurate in solving this hallucination problem.
Yeah. But so that's the interesting point, because generally these LLMs are frozen in time. And remember, ChatGPT 3.5 was frozen, in 2022, I think.
Right.
So it's been a while. I got to show you this, though. Adding surfing, you know, which you can do, I think, and I bet you could do with Copilot with Bing, right, is adding that information makes it current. But there's a risk. So let me see if I can show you this. A guy sent me his Microsoft Copilot search results. He asked it, what are the origins of the, I have to download this, I guess, to show it to you. The origins of the Arab-Israeli conflict.
Oh boy.
And he sent me a screenshot. It had all the normal stuff at first. The last, you know, creation of Israel, Zionism, there was a whole, you know, this is obviously a very politicized topic, right? But the last piece in this, point four, Satan's role. Beyond geopolitical factors, there's a deeper spiritual dimension. The true source of the Arab-Israeli conflict lies in Satan's fight against God. This is Copilot. He manipulates propaganda, terrorist groups, and anti-global tensions to delay his own doom and exterminate God's people.
Well, I mean, when you say it's co-pilot, it's what you're really saying is it's ChatGPT, right? I mean, that's the...
And it found a source, obviously a demented source. I mean, actually, this is valuable if it would have...
Oh, actually, you know what? You might be right. I think the insanity here might be because... Copilot is when you add what happens when you add Bing to
to chat. Yes, and I think it's it has a number of references in here, so I think it is using Bing, but it could easily just been ChatGPT.
Well, that's how they bring it up to date, right? They're searching the web, which is what you don't want. I don't have this in the notes, but like I said, there's going to be a Copilot in OneDrive, and that's going to be something people can use to throw their whatever body of data you have into this thing and just work against that. And that
it's better if you say this is the corpus and that's, but that's
make it as finite as possible. Make it as specific to whatever the task is as possible.
The best uses of AI have been like radiologists. So the AI is trained on a bunch of, millions.
Yeah. Pattern recognition, summarizing. Exactly. These are things that AI is very good
at.
I make this joke. This is just a joke, but what AI is bad at is math, where you say what's 11 plus 7 and it says Q. You're like, yeah, that's not the answer.
It wouldn't actually. This answer about Satan wouldn't have been so bad if it had put it in a thing saying there are some Christians who believe this.
Yeah, okay, but
it quoted it as authoritative. Like, well, there's 4 points.
I would argue that it would be smarter if we just ignored that part of it.
Maybe. This is maybe. So that's important. Keep when you get this stuff, and Microsoft says that at the bottom of every search, there may be errors here.
Yep. All right. Well, let's not blow away our AI section.
Oh, that's for later. Okay. We're still talking about Copilot. It can be accessed from Copilot.
Well, specifically in Windows, right? In Windows. There were two updates to that Windows sidebar this past week. One is the addition of Microsoft 365 capabilities, which, not a big deal, but it was already available to pro users. Oh, and speaking of which, to your point about the $30. So $20 makes sense or is consistent for things like ChatGPT and Copilot Pro. But I think the additional $10 in Microsoft 365 is literally the graph and that it's working across data that by and large is stored inside Microsoft, right? Inside their data centers, and that you're getting capabilities inside of apps like Word, Excel, PowerPoint, Outlook, et cetera, that these other things can't do.
Right.
So there is additional functionality. It's not just they're arbitrarily making it $10 per month more.
Okay.
There's actually a lot more.
$10 for the extra.
Yeah, you're getting that thing you get with the $20 from somewhere else.
Yeah.
But you're also getting the Microsoft 365 stuff. And I think that explains the price.
Perfect. Yeah.
So the second edition came yesterday, and this one came out of nowhere. And I was actually really happy to see this happen, not because I care about this feature edition, but because the woman that tweeted about it is a corporate vice president of Microsoft, Shilpa. I'm going to butcher her last name. I apologize. Ranganathan. This woman has only tweeted twice in the past year, but she tweeted yesterday that Windows Copilot will now launch in a wider sidebar, which is not particularly interesting or whatever. It's resizable. And also they have a little toggle up there so you can, toggle the size between the old size and the new size, right? And this is only interesting to me on two levels. One is that we don't really hear from these people that much. So maybe something is rubbering up a little bit.
Ranganathan.
Ranganathan's thing. Yeah. So I'm not going to sound like this. So I am not seeing this. And what I realized later was that it's because I'm in Mexico. So this feature hasn't in fact rolled out, and we discovered, I asked her and she responded.
Oh, nice.
How do you get this update? Like what's the mechanism by which this is delivered to the operating system? And you may be fascinated to discover that it is not Windows Update. It is not the Microsoft Store. It's Microsoft Edge. So you have to go into Edge, update it to the latest version.
Oh, my
God. And once you do, you will get this functionality because this came up, several months ago. But that sidebar is, in fact, another example of Microsoft.
It's Edge.
Edge on you. It's another instance of Edge.
Even though the button is in the back where the charms are, it is actually an Edge.
It's Microsoft Edge.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah,
so you may choose Chrome or whatever, but you have to use Edge to use this product in Windows.
Interesting.
And, you know, whatever. But it's not a big deal. Except I can't have it.
Aw. So, I don't know if I'm using the latest Edge. So.
Well, you can update it.
Yeah.
I'm fully updated. I don't have it. It's because I'm in Mexico. If you look at the list of countries where this is available, I think this isn't one of them. It's also why I can't access Copilot on my phone. It gives me a weird error message, but I think it's Mexico. And the thing that's strange about this is if I go to the web, I can generate images like I've been doing for my site, no problem. But the sidebar in Windows and the mobile app on Android will not work here.
So. You're not using a VPN, though, are you?
No, but I don't think it's that sophisticated. I'm not. I'm sorry. Let's answer your question. No, I'm not.
Because, you know, if you had one at home, that would explain why the desktop would work. But obviously the cell carrier, it knows your carrier. It knows you're in Mexico.
I don't know why the web version's working.
Isn't that interesting?
I guess technically because the cloud server is not here, I guess it might be why.
Right.
But I can't. When I run it locally in the operating system, it doesn't work. Anyway, look, this feature is not interesting to me in the slightest. I don't like sidebars and whatever. But the notion that that's the mechanism by which this thing is updated is kind of blows my mind.
It's Edge.
Yeah, it's Microsoft Edge.
What does that mean? Does it mean that they want to? It's interesting. Edge is kind of an engine.
Yes, it's probably right. I mean, it's obviously using it's not just it's not about the rendering engine so much as it is the UI is delivered as part of Edge, I think, right? So when you get this update and open the sidebar, in addition to being wider and being resizable, there's an additional little button up in the corner, and that lets you toggle between the two default sizes. And we talk about, you know, Edge bloat and
ooh, look at that.
There's all kinds of issues.
I can make Bingo big.
This is an extreme version of bloat, isn't it? I mean, like an AI sidebar in Windows that's crazy.
Yeah, that's interesting.
It is interesting.
All right, so. Yeah, it's funny. I have Bing Chat. I haven't done a lot of comparison between all these different chat things I have, and I presume that if it's using OpenAI, it's going to be. But as you say, it's OpenAI Plus. So
yeah, and Microsoft doesn't tell us exactly what that means. I mean, part of it is Bing for sure.
Yeah.
And this isn't the exact wording, but Yusuf Mehdi almost a year ago described it as some kind of a, you know, Microsoft secret sauce, and this is. This is the weird thing they have with their partnership with OpenAI, where these guys are obviously partners, but they're competing against each other as well. And there have been very overt examples of Microsoft salespeople kind of dumping on OpenAI because their version of this doesn't have their stuff in it, you know. And whether or not you think that the Microsoft editions are an advantage or a something that hobbles them, you know, I don't know. But
yeah,
if you're showing the screen now. So if you look at that button up in the right corner next to the X, that's the new button, and that should toggle it between two sizes, is my guess. Or I don't know what it's doing.
It says show.
Is it just docking it?
Show is overlay versus not. So it's making it a window as opposed to an overlay on Edge, I guess, right?
Okay, that's
so if I close Edge, it stays.
Well, you're creating a. So one of the problems is with Copilot, the sidebar is that it pushes windows over when it opens, and then when you close, they're all still pushed over. So if I believe this new functionality then would hopefully prevent that from happening. It would allow this thing to appear on top of other windows and then not move them around, is my guess.
Huh. So if I close this,
Well, it's not going to close. The Edge application running is not going to, Edge is running in the background, right?
Right.
It's,
there's a button that says open in Microsoft Edge. Refresh. So
no, this just has to do with its position, like Z order compared to other windows.
Show
because
side
when
by
this
side,
thing is kind of
show is overlay. I get it. Okay, I get
it. Yeah, when it doesn't allow overlay, as far as desktop or any apps are concerned, the desktop size is smaller.
Right.
Right. I think it's the point.
Right. That makes sense. So this is cool. I guess. Yeah.
I guess.
So I think this is a precursor, though, of AI everywhere, right? On everything, all over my stuff.
This is the thing. So, all right, we're going to get, I'm sorry. I'm stepping all over myself here. I don't want to get too far.
Okay. Sorry.
But I let it happen too. We'll get there. There's some interesting stuff going on here. So, how we get AI in different products, not just Windows, but, it has to do with Stevie Batiste and the side-by-side thing. Remember, you know, the very nature of Copilot is that it is next to you. Right. Or next to what you're doing. That is the point of it. You know, some people will say, well, I don't know why we have to have a sidebar. And it's like, because the thing you're working in doesn't have any AI in it. You know, eventually these things will become smarter about that thing that you're working next. And then the thing itself will become smarter and just have features built in. So that's all part of the evolution. Anyhow.
But you said Windows 12 at the beginning of the show. I just saw a rumor that Windows 12 is the name that we're going to see in the middle of the year at some point.
So this is like picking the winner of the Super Bowl. You're going to hear things on either side of it.
And I know who's going to win the Super Bowl. You don't have to ask me that. I know exactly.
Wow. Okay. Is it because you asked Ark?
No, it's because I know in my heart.
I asked Ark.
That my boys will win. What did Ark say?
Well, I'll tell you, when I asked Ark, they said the same thing. So
good.
There you go.
Good. All right.
And I assume by your boys, you mean San Francisco.
I do.
So I think I put this on Instagram somewhere. Someone has gone around Mexico City, and by someone, I think I mean the NFL, and have spray paint. I'm not kidding.
No, I believe.
They have spray painted on sidewalks everywhere information about the Super Bowl, the teams that are playing, what time it's playing locally, and where you can see it. It's everywhere. Like, and if you think about a sidewalk and how they have these kind of grid, you know, sizes of cement, it's that big. It's, you know, 6 feet by 6 feet or whatever. They're everywhere. And we were out there just staring at it, and this guy walks up. When did this happen? I'm like, I don't know. We woke up and they were everywhere. Like, it's, and they're really, I don't, that's one way to promote, you know?
Is that legal?
I don't know. It feels like
graffiti, but I guess because it's on the ground. Literally,
it's like you walk outside in a desert and it's snowing and everyone's scratching their heads and they're like, how did this get here?
Well, you know, there was a truck and a guy with a stencil and four guys.
Appeared one day.
Okay, you do blue. Yep. Okay, you do red. Okay, you do green.
Right. It's probably a stencil and they probably blew it on really quick. It's silent, so you wouldn't hear them. Yeah. Like 3 o'clock in the morning or something.
It's graffiti, though.
It is graffiti.
I can remember this happening before for other things, but remember the NFL really wants to grow internationally, right?
Yep.
So,
I think they play games.
Oh, they play in Mexico City every year. In fact, they just announced a new series of games, I think in Argentina or somewhere.
I know Brazil is going to be
Brazil,
one.
Maybe that's
If you thought playing in Denver was hard, welcome to Mexico City, folks. It's a little higher.
Wow.
Yeah. So there's a debate. We're debating. And honestly, I think Microsoft is debating because between extending the support of Windows 10, right, another 3 years, Do they really want to have the confusion of three different supported Windows versions in the market at the same time? You can make a pretty good case that no, they do not want that. And that maybe going forward with Windows 11 might be the right idea. So we'll see how they ultimately do brand this thing. But we know that there is a major release of Windows coming. There's some debate about the timing too, by the way. It's not just the name. A lot of people seem to believe it's going to happen in the first half of the year, which we haven't seen ever. I don't know. I'd have to go back. Really, I mean, maybe Windows 3 something was April, maybe. But, you know, Windows 10, the first version was July 2015. Windows 11 was October 2021, whatever year that was. We haven't done that. Not including the H1, H2 things, but I mean, an actual new version of Windows. So whatever the timing is and whatever the name is, you know, we'll see, but we know it's coming. And there have been indications from Microsoft. There have been indications from their partners of different names, actually. The latest one is official support. I would call it a Microsoft support page that specifically mentions Windows 11 version 24H2. To be honest, I don't actually think this means too much because even if there is a Windows 12, there's still going to be a Windows 11 24H2. So, what's the difference? Like, it's not like they just stop updating it. I mean, even when Windows 11 came out, there were versions of Windows 10, right? So, we'll see. But this is, you know, whatever they call it, like I said, or whatever they call them.
Yeah, what does it matter, I guess? It's just a number, right?
Well, what does it matter? I don't know. This is all we care about here, Leo. It's like, it doesn't matter at all. But, He knows a lot, you know, about nothing.
You're listening to Windows Weekly. Let's pause just briefly. Paul Thurrott is here, as you may have noticed. Richard Campbell's not. He is stuck on a long drive, it sounds like.
Oh, I should tell you. I'm sorry to interrupt, but he texted.
Update. This just in.
He will be here.
Oh, God damn it.
I know. What time is it? Yeah, he could be here in as soon as half an hour.
Okay, Kevin,
minutes. Prepare
the double box. Okay.
Put out the good linen. Campbell is on the way.
All right, our show continues with, this one. This is, Steve Gibson talked a little bit about this, the Mozilla article about how the big platforms basically are screwing Mozilla. Yeah.
So I came away with three takeaways from this that were not anything that Mozilla wrote about. And I'm very curious to see what you have to say about this. But before we get to that, it will come as no surprise that Mozilla has been fighting this good fight since this was a good fight, right? They were the original, the OG complainers about big tech. They took, in the form of Netscape, took Microsoft all the way to antitrust federal court, right? And the outcome of that was unfortunate. Netscape disappeared. They were swallowed up by AOL originally and then disappeared entirely. And in their death throes, they, you know, ejected Mozilla out into the world, this kind of high-minded, open source, you know, free as in free kind of a company, released the source code, et cetera, et cetera. And now we have this, you know, 20 plus years of browsers that have kind of occurred in their wake. What they've done now, though, and we're seeing this, you know, Epic Games has sued Google and Apple. Spotify was the impetus for the DMA that the EU has now, right? They complained about Apple. And we're starting to see, Sonos has complained about Google, took them to court, actually. We're starting to see companies come out and complain, right? And this is not new. I mean, Mozilla has a rich history of doing this type of thing. But I do feel like their current complaint is particularly well done, because they started a GitHub repository documenting all the ways that the platform makers, Apple, Google, and Microsoft, screw them over and make it impossible for them to compete. And I read through this and I thought, okay, look, I understand this stuff really well. If you look at the three things they complain about for Microsoft, these are topics we've been talking about for years. We know this, right? And we know what they do. We know how Edge still runs when you click on a search result or a widget. We know that Edge runs when you use that sidebar we were just talking about, the Copilot sidebar, right? We know that Microsoft tried to get rid of default apps, an interface that came out of their antitrust troubles in 1998 or 9, whatever year that was, in Windows 11. And so many people complained they put it back in, but then completely defanged it so it actually doesn't work the way it's supposed to. And they make it really, really hard for you to change the default, right? When Netscape was competing, and then Mozilla later was competing with Microsoft and Internet Explorer, that was the battle. It was the battle of defaults, like the power of defaults. We all know that people take the path of least resistance, and that if you make something the default, the majority of people will just take it. They won't even experiment. They don't care. And that was bad enough. But now these platform makers are really tilting the playing field, if you will, which was how they describe it, right? They call it the platform tilt. They're putting their finger on the scale, and they're more explicitly kind of forcing users in some cases to not use rival browsers, right? And this is fascinating to me. So this in certification, right? This Cory Doctorow thing, I believe that in certification, as he defines it, and as we know it, and as we see it out in the world, actually started with the iPhone and with smartphones, because these companies, Apple first, of course, but also Google, right? Apple, in their case, had been defeated so many times at the hand of Microsoft that they were like, we're not going to have an open market where we can compete on an even playing field. We're going to make sure that this thing is a walled garden that we control, and that's the only way we're ever going to succeed. And by the way, it worked out great for them, but it also eliminates a lot of choice, but it also eliminates a lot of competition, right? And this mentality has pervaded beyond mobile. Windows 10 first. Well, Windows 8 to some degree, but Windows 10 especially, and now Windows 11 even worse, is an example of Microsoft taking what they see the mobile platform makers doing and applying it to a desktop system to limit the availability of choice. and they're making it harder for these rival companies to create third-party products that will compete with the stuff that they make. So there's one aspect of it. So we're starting to see this kind of lockdown lack of choice. And I mentioned the default, you know, this default apps thing is a great example of them actually overreaching, and they weren't able to get that going. The second one is that Firefox, you can look this up. It's very simple. Go to Stack Counter or wherever you want to go and look at how their market share, really usage share, has declined over the years. And it was a magical moment. I think it was 2009, 2 years after the iPhone came out, but 1 or 2 years before it was, you know, surging and were available worldwide, where they were the most popular browser in the world. They had about 30, 32% usage share. And then it's been on a rocket sled downward slope ever since then. And there's no doubt that Mozilla made mistakes, strategy mistakes, product mistakes, whatever it is. There's no doubt that there's been improved competition, that when Microsoft stopped updating IE6, i.e. with IE6, other companies stepped in, and most prominently Chrome, with Google with Chrome, and took away some of that share as well. So this competition occurring too. But when you look at Firefox today, you see something very stark, right? You see single-digit usage share on desktop. But when you factor in mobile, the entire personal computing space, their usage share is 0.5%. They went from 30% of the market, the entire market, to less than a half of, to one half of 1%. And I think a lot of that can be tied to this smartphone era initiated insuratification policy, where they make it impossible for Firefox, or difficult at least, but impossible in some cases, to really differentiate themselves on mobile. And people just, you know, for a long time, you couldn't even choose another browser. It was not, you could install a browser, but your default was always going to be Safari or whatever, or Chrome on Android. So I think these things are tied together. And the proof point for this, and this is really astonishing. The problem is I don't have a hard number on this one, but there is one platform out there which has not been certified because it's not controlled by anybody. And that platform is Linux. And if you look at Firefox usage on Linux, which I can't do to any degree of accuracy, but anyone who uses Linux will tell you that this is true. Firefox is all over the place. It's often the default browser in these distributions. And when you have a system where the default you choose is based entirely on user choice or preferences, and that's what the maker of that thing does, then you can see the difference between a world in which we don't have encertification, which is Linux, and a world in which we do, which is Android, iOS, Windows, whatever you want, you know, all the other ones. And the fact that Linux is the one place in the world where Firefox actually still thrives is astonishing. I know it's probably going downhill now. I'm sure there are Chromium-based things happening now. But the reason for that is just inertia. I mean, eventually, the cancer that killed Firefox everywhere is going to kill it literally. The other thing, the other takeaway that I got out of this Mozilla thing was, if you look at their issue tracker, right, where they track the issues that each of the three platform makers have, Google and Microsoft both have three issues, major issues. One of those issues on each is the same as the issue on the other, so they both do one of the same things. And Apple has 11. Apple is so restrictive that they're somehow about 3.5 times as terrible as Google and Microsoft when it comes to this kind of thing.
That's kind of amazing. But that's a walled garden for you. I mean, that's really almost the definition.
But I think if you want to, when we write the story one day, and we will, that Mozilla tried and failed, just like Netscape, they made mistakes. And just like Netscape, yes, in some cases, competitors had better features, et cetera. But I think this true tale that will be told here is that Apple killed Mozilla or Firefox.
Wow.
It was Apple.
That's so depressing.
Yep. And that was my key takeaway. It was like the encertification that we've been talking about for the past 6, 8, 10, whatever months, thanks to Cory Doctorow, can be traced back directly to the iPhone. Not that there weren't things in the past that were crappy and terrible. I mean, obviously, this has been going on for a while, but the way that this has pervaded our industry, it's Apple's fault. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
Apple.
Well, and Mozilla was very upset about Apple's concessions to the EU and the Digital Markets Act.
Yes, of course, everyone is. I mean, of course.
Because they basically said Apple's going to make us write two browsers, one for iOS everywhere in the world and one for iOS in Europe.
What would be more horrible then being forced to use a browser rendering engine that you didn't make on some other platform, it would be having to jump through all these hoops so you can do this stupid thing, and then you just end up losing money anyway. They've orchestrated this in such a way that, you know. So
I'm really curious if the EU is going to accept their solution.
I think the EU is going to come back and say, I think they have to.
It's next month. So
it's a tough thing. Look, even Apple's biggest fans, who I think are the most, I mean, the people who just love everything they do and don't care about the ramifications and Alex just Lindsay. See the good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Those people, would have to admit that there are downsides to this, and that what they've done does not meet the spirit of this regulation, which I'm sure they don't agree with. The issue is this is the rule of law, and they're not meeting that requirement.
They even say, we don't want to do this. We think it's really bad for our users and it's a security issue. But since they're making us, we're going to do the best thing we can do. Well, it's the
except that's not what. Listen, I previously mentioned the fact, and I did not come up with this. This is not an original thought on my part, but somebody had written this notion. Like, explain to me out in the corporate world that there's a deal between two companies, and that deal includes the moving of $20+ billion per year,
per year,
from one company to the other.
Yeah.
And they're not touting this to the rooftops. Yeah. That's Apple, by the way. Apple is also the company that will contort itself. Like most people would say, think about GDPR, right? This data protection regulation they have in the EU. All cloud providers basically said, look, it would be stupid to do one thing here and one thing here.
Right.
We're going to work toward GDPR compatibility 100% across the board everywhere in the world, because it's just the best thing for customers. It's the best thing for us. Apple, the most belligerent of companies, looks at the same situation and says, you know what? We're going to go to the time and effort and spend the money to have two versions of everything we make, because screw everybody. And that says more to me about the actual caliber and quality of this company than any of their marketing, any of their everything works together, great, blah, 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 whatever. It's just frustrating how different the reality of this company is from the impression that people have of it.
Yeah.
It's terrible. It's a terrible company. At the very least, I would just ask you to believe this, because I know some people are already firing off the little nastygram emails. You can't get this big and not be terrible. So at the very least, please, you can look at the evidence, whatever, but you know, Apple, Google, Microsoft, Facebook, any of these companies, they're all terrible. At least understand that. Don't pretend that they are in any way better. They absolutely are not. And I will say, just personally, I fell into a trap of believing that was true of Microsoft for several years, because this company refused to do anything aggressive.
Right.
All they did was talk about meeting customers where they were and partnering with everybody and kumbaya. And I thought, oh my God, they changed. And then the last year happened and I realized, nope, this is terrible. And I think this is a maturity moment that we all need to get to.
I got a text yesterday during Security Now from a company saying, would you like to participate in a survey? And I always say no to these, but I don't know why. I was just sitting there. I didn't have much to do with Security Now. So I said, go ahead. And I went through it, and it was asking me, what do you think of all these companies, Apple, Microsoft, Amazon, Google? It was lots of like questions about their reputation and stuff. And then I got to the end of it and they said, okay, would you like to go a little deeper? And I said, yeah. And it turned out it was Amazon doing this poll.
Yes.
Because all the subsequent questions were, well, do you think Amazon's a good employer? Do you think they treat their employees well?
Nice.
Do you think they pay them well? Do you think they make executives cry at their desk every day? And no, they didn't ask that. Oh, Stephanie.
I hope it's
Stephanie,
every day.
Stephanie,
while you're
here. She's opening an Amazon box. Could you put something on that hook?
People are upset about that dot on the wall. Do you like hang a jacket back on that or something? She's like,
no, don't
she didn't take off her shirt.
Okay.
Oh, that one, and our viewership just doubled. That's nice.
That's so cute.
Thanks, honey.
Actually, it'd be a good place for a clock.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
I'm just thinking. Anyway, what were we saying?
That Apple is terrible Firefox is going to die. And when that happens,
I want
the history that gets written to be accurate to say Apple killed Firefox. Yeah. Because that's the reason they died.
No, okay, but it got help from the other guys.
I know it's not the only reason. I'm just saying, look, it's never any one thing.
Perfect.
Right.
Perfect.
Is it too much color?
No, it's perfect.
No, it's fine.
It's perfect.
Thank you.
They're going crazy in the Discord. They're so happy.
Okay. Anywho. This is
Microsoft, Google, they were accessories after the fact, but that's the right. Murderer was Apple.
That's right. I would call them copycat killers. That would be the term.
Okay.
Apple is a serial killer.
Yeah.
Microsoft and Google are copycat killers. Let's just get this accurate. Yeah. Okay.
And it's sad, you know, and I'm kind of, I'm also an accessory after the fact because now I'm using Arc, which is a Chromium derivative, not supporting Firefox.
As a user, you have to do the right thing that's right for you. And you exist in the real world in which these forces have arrayed against not just Firefox, but you, right? And that's, you know, you can't just, you know, I'm going to use Firefox forever because, you know, I mean, that's a great position to take, but except that it isn't, you know, unfortunately. Like, I would love that Firefox, if Firefox could fight Chrome and whatever else on an even footing,
yeah,
we would live in a very different world today. It's not bad about it.
And I still love Firefox.
I do too.
The only difference really between Firefox and Arc is the UI. And so Firefox copied, you know, basically the browser UI from 100 years ago.
The thing that is most striking to me about Arc, and I feel weird even talking about this product because it's so non-mainstream. It's so out there. It almost feels naive, but Arc is the first serious attempt to rethink what a web browser is.
Yeah.
Even the browser I love the most, which is Brave, is a browser. It is there. No one would ever look at it and say, what is this thing? It is the playbook version of a browser. Now they've done some things in the back end I really like with regards to security and privacy and all that. And it's a little stripped down. There's no feature bloat going on there. I like that too. But we're not talking about major user experience differences, right? Day-to-day stuff. What Arc is doing is revolutionary. It doesn't mean it's going to succeed, right? It doesn't mean that this is the future. There are some questions, by the way, about its latest things, the stuff you were showing earlier, and how they bypass Google and bypass the websites that create the content and just create, you know, give you the answer. Like the ethics of that maybe is the best way to put it. Or, you know, what does that do to content creators? And I got to tell you, I'm not sure they have a good answer to that question. So they may have plans for, I don't know. It becomes a paid thing and maybe there's a kickback to the content they're taking or whatever. I don't know that, but this is, but the thing to keep in mind is that Arc is a company that's not much bigger than the company I own. So it's not on the same level as Google, Microsoft, you know, Apple, right? It's not on the same level field as Epic Games taking on Apple. It's not in the level field of Sonos taking on Google.
No,
this is a mom and pop thing. So we should still debate the ethics of it. We should still ask questions and we should still wait and see what happens here. But they are trying to do something that I think is amazing. I mean, it's just, it is a thorough rethinking of what this product is and what it means to use it. I mean, and I'm sorry, you know, Firefox, Brave, Google, whatever. These things, I mean, ultimately, from a mile high, they're all exactly the same thing, right?
I wonder, you were a big Vivaldi fan. I mean, Vivaldi is highly customizable. Could it be made to look like Arc?
No, I don't think it works the same way. And I'm a little off now with Vivaldi. It's kind of been a while. Vivaldi
is, in my opinion, is too much to do.
From day one, honestly, the very first question they ask you is, do you want to have the browser? Or do you want to have the browser with the email and the calendar and you're like, and no, right there, you're like,
I just want a browser.
I mean, it's like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And it's busy, but obviously it speaks to a certain audience. There are people who like to have all the airplane, you know, the airline carrier, whatever, the airplane cockpit, you know, style thing. But I don't, I like minimalist things and whatever, but I think there's a barrier to entry when it comes to Arc with regards to just getting over that hump and then understanding what's going on in the UI and that people will come back on day two and their tabs are all gone and they're like, what's going on here? It's confusing, but it's confusing because they didn't just do the same thing everyone else is doing. Like for example, when Microsoft made Windows Phone 7, there was actually a lot of innovation there from a user experience standpoint. And we can, you know, there's a whole story about why this didn't work and all that. But this notion of we're not just going to have like a grid of apps, that whack-a-mole UI that we still have, right? A grid of icons on a home screen. We're going to really think through like, what is it that people are trying to do on their phone and how can we make that easier? And there was some real innovation there and that failed horribly. Arc Browser could fail in the same way, but I appreciate the attempt. And I actually see the, and you do too, obviously, and see the benefits of it, right? You can see what they did and you're like, you know what? This changes things. Like, yeah. It's very interesting, yeah. I think.
No, I love it for a lot of things. And it, by the way, fits very well into the future AI world. They're smart yes. to be using Perplexity
I wonder, as
search and so forth.
I don't know if you know enough about the history to know if this was a plan or the way I imagine it was 1 year or 2 years in that this AI thing became obvious and they said, we got to pivot to this. But whatever the reason, they are uniquely, not positioned, but they've delivered a uniquely AI infused product where yeah. everyone else is kind of at like, it's kind of tacked on
right.
in some way. So they have a traditional browser and they're like, well, we'll do this thing too. So like, for example, in Brave, they have an AI thing called Leo, right? Which I'm sure you at least like on some level. And Leo kicks in through when you type into the address bar, right? If you ask, you can ask questions that way. So it's like we didn't really rethink. Well, I guess technically Arc does something very similar, but Arc doesn't even have an address bar. You know, so
it's not completely surprising because the people who started Arc came from Tesla, came from Instagram, Medium. A lot of them came from Chrome. Amazon, right. Snap, Slack, Pinterest, they've all
get this,
been around.
It's like a bouillabaisse of talent, but also like the people who might've came from Chrome or some other browser company. Right. Remember when Safari started, you might remember his name. There was a guy who was very, famous and highly placed at Mozilla who left to go to Apple. And at the time everyone was like, what's going on here? And, it's because they created Safari.
Yeah.
You might have these people in these companies who are like, you know, I have ideas and no one's interested. And the reason is we're all really comfortable with what browsers are. And maybe you put a bunch of those people in a room together and you come up with something, you know, it doesn't always work. Right. But I feel like anyway, I love that they're doing it. It's very interesting.
It's a somewhat quixotic venture because they have no revenue model.
Well, that's what I'm saying. We actually don't know.
They've this raised is like money and their privacy
it's
policy.
It's the change bank, says the bank
not,
joke, right?
Yeah, they're not.
How are you
going to
make money?
You?
Volume, you know?
Yeah. I don't really know what the plan is. I think they want to do a enterprise thing and they think that's how they're going to make
something. So that worked great for Netscape. I look at DuckDuckGo and I wanted the same thing, right? So I keep looking at this browser and I think to myself, there's some basic features it doesn't have. You can't even like pin tabs, right? It doesn't have extensions, you know? So it's kind of a non-starter for a user, but I kind of like I like the company. I like their whole thing. But how do you make money? You know,
right.
You look at Brave, same thing. It's like, what are you doing? Or you look at Mozilla now, like this comes up at the end of the show, but Mozilla has had to branch out into other products,
a lot
of which are free and paid versions, right?
Right. They're trying
to do that
money
in the browser
somehow.
Space.
Yeah.
They're trying to stay alive, you know? And, you know, of course, we can't begrudge them that. But you write articles about the stuff and then people are like, I'm never going to pay anyone $5. And it's like, oh, there you go. Well, you're contributing too then. What are you, like kicking the corpse on the way by? Like, I get it. But like don't feel so strict.
I have become, obviously, my attitude's changed a lot. You've had Therat Premium for a long time. And you do it exactly the right way, which is you have a paid, mostly free content. And then you put some really good premium content behind it. Paywall. I'm thinking about it because I just renewed for another year and it's worth it. And we're trying to do something similar.
I can't take credit for that, by the way. That was other people.
That was Penton.
And I fought. Well, no, this was at the previous company, BWW. A small team, a small group of people. Other people came up with this idea. I fought it. You know, I want my content to be free and out there, you know, kind of in an idealistic way.
Yeah. So do I.
And I'm not comfortable asking people for money. You know, I'm not comfortable raising prices on anything.
You and I are exactly cut from the same cloth.
I'm an artist,
but
Leo.
We have to pay rent, right? I mean, there is a reason. There is, you know, and that's the thing. I've become more and more aware of.
As your financial mortality approaches, you realize I have to do something here.
But journalism's collapsing. It's not just me. I mean, it's everywhere. It's terrifying.
It is terrifying.
And I want to, I think what I kind of want people to understand is you, there was a false promise at the beginning of the internet that you could do this for free.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's, well, and the bill is coming due.
This is, I mean, look, we could pretend this is certification. I would just say this is inevitable. We cheer the notion of the democratization of maybe publishing or music creation or whatever it might be. And what we don't really think through ever is the ramifications and what happens on the other side of this. You know, like on the one hand, it's like, it's really neat that anyone can have a platform. And on the other hand, it's terrifying that everyone has a platform because most people's ideas are terrible. You know, most people are horrible. And I don't know that I want to hear from these people. So, for example, like a real world example of that is I use the Google News feed, specifically a news app, specifically for the tech feed. I read it every morning. And this is, I've been meaning to write about this. I've started taking pictures of it. So in my news feed, there'll be like The Verge and Gadget and Gizmodo and these kind of top level tech crunch.
Are you taking the Google News app?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so what I do that same too. Every day I check
it. So here's what the first bit of lack of sophistication in this app is The Verge and Engadget and Gizmodo all have branched out into other things. Right. They write about things that are sort of technology, like cars or space or whatever it is. It was there's a story in the newsfeed this morning from The Verge about a Lego set. They write about board games. They write about just normal things. In my own world, in part of Threat Premium, like one of the things I do is similar to that in the sense that it's not really necessarily about tech, but I might write about more personal things and whatever. And the thing is, that's fine. I don't want to expect to see that in a newsfeed that's specifically about tech.
Right.
Right. Like, and that's, so that's one thing. That's, that to me is a problem. I don't like it. There are articles about bicycles, motorcycles, skiing. It has nothing to do with tech, but it's almost like someone was like, well, you know, they mentioned an iPad app or something. Who knows? It's really unsophisticated, but that's not the problem. The problem actually is AI, because the thing that has been taking over my newsfeed as I sit there every day and try to curate it, I don't want to see stuff from here. I don't want to see stuff from here. There's an infinite number of URLs that are some random combination of letters and numbers .com or some random combination of letters and numbers dot something dot random, you know, it goes on and on. And it will be like, it will say, so, I'm not going to make this up. This is not an actual URL, but it will be like stateside.7.com. And it's a news, it is a tech story, but it was either regurgitated with AI or just copied wholesale from some other actual blogger.
Yeah.
They are, this is a cancer that is eating my tech news feed.
Yes.
And the fact that Google can't or won't do anything about that is terrifying. And the fact that I found a news feed called Artifact by the guys from Instagram that actually worked really well at this and is now going away at the end of the month is even more terrifying.
Yeah, Artifact's going out of business. Yeah, Kevin
Systrom.
This is
a huge, huge problem. Huge problem. So this is it in certification? Yes, on one level, of course it is. But it's not just that, right?
We need
a
new phrase, AR fornication.
Yeah, the
AI fornication.
The AIification. Yeah.
Because I mean, AI is flooding the zone now. Yeah. And it's only going to get worse. And
this is, we can talk about regulations and everything, but honestly, I don't understand, just as from a pure business model perspective, how Google, I'll just single them out, doesn't want to put a stop to this. This undermines their credibility as a source of information. And that to me is their, is really the foundation of their business. I know they make the money from the ads, but those ads become less valuable if the content that's around them is garbage and people leave.
Well, that's true. It's tempting. And I don't know if I doubt this is true, but it's tempting to say this is Google's revenge against all the news entities that said, well, you have to pay us for.
Oh my God. So, if you haven't seen this, this is amazing. There is a couple of things here. So there's an editorial in the Washington Post this week about the real danger to news is AI. Okay, obvious enough.
Yeah, well, that's what the Washington Post thinks for sure.
I scrolled by this thing and I said, I don't have to read this. Who cares? Yeah. Like, I know what they think. But then I thought to myself, hold on a second. The little tech reporter guys, Jeffrey Fowler, whoever the other people are.
Yeah.
They have been on a mom and pop crusade against digital photography AI ever since Google came out with the Pixel 8. They can't stop writing about it. It makes them insane.
Interesting.
They never reviewed the Pixel 8. All they did was write 5 articles about how terrible this is.
Oh, wow.
Without sort of understanding that since photography has existed and is, in fact, an artificially created rendition of reality,
right,
that we have been editing those images ever since they existed is, I think, a fact that needs to kind of factor into this discussion, that this nuance is lost on these people. So I'm like, okay, you know what? I got to go back and look at this. So I have my aggravation with them about the photography AI stuff. All right, screw it. I'm going to read this thing. So I'm reading it. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, hold on. The person who wrote it led Google's news organization for like 7 or 8 years. He was the guy.
Richard Gingrich.
That was forced to. Yeah. Look, this, it's crazy.
Oh, and if interesting. You read the way so it's an op-ed then. It's not a.
Yes. No, it's not a news story. It's actually rather astonishing to see his side of the story I just told, or the story you mentioned, which is that Google used to screen scrape everybody, put those results in search results. People freaked out, started suing them. Regulatory bodies started waking up and they said, okay. And they spent 6-7 years coming to individual deals with publishers in every country on earth. There was a period of time where almost every day there was a Google announces partnership with some public news organization in Australia, New Zealand, South Africa. It was every day. Now it's everybody. I'm like wondering where my deal is, by the way. But his perspective on that is fascinating because he saw this as just a money grab. But what he's saying is that this AI thing is like that exponential, that the danger, like he from his perspective, at least we were driving traffic to you.
Right.
That's kind of what he's saying. He's like, look, I may have stabbed you with a knife, but I didn't kill you. AI is going to make your body unrecognizable. So, yeah, I guess that's worse. You know, you look a little less terrible by comparison, but you weren't as sophisticated back then either, right? You would be doing this right now if you had invented it. It's a very hypocritical. It's worth reading and with the understanding of who he is and what he did, and then read his take. You know, it'd be like a Nazi coming out, like, yeah, we killed a few people, but come on, we were trying to advance science over here. And it's like, dude, that is not what you were doing. You know, like
I got to get Jeff Jarvis on this one because he's friends with Richard. Interesting. I will ask Jeff about this later today, actually. Now, we're going to clear the air here. You need a breather, Paul. You've been ranting and raving, and I think it's a good idea just to take a break and talk a little bit about ClipChamp. That's your special place.
I had actually noticed at least one of these features before they announced it, and I was like, oh, I don't recall this being a thing. But the other day, the ClipChamp team, who is now blogging at the Microsoft 365 blog, announced 2 new features that are related to audio, and then a third one is coming later this month, right? So the first one is just audio recording, and it's a way to you've made a video of whatever kind, and now you want to do a voiceover. They let you record for up to 30 minutes. It's a neat feature. And by the way, in the screenshot, you can kind of see this a little bit. It says Coach On over there in the corner. There's actually an optional feature called Coach, and you put it on, you do your voiceover, and it gives you feedback afterwards where it says, you know, you said a lot, you did that, you know, it's really, again, free web app, astonishing, right? It's kind of cool. ClipChamp has also had a text-to-speech feature for a while, but now it supports a new track in the editing track or whatever, where you can change where that text to speech item is in the timeline, and you can change the language it speaks, the voice it uses, the emotion, the pitch of the voice, the pace. You can edit the script,
and it will edit the. I hate her so much.
I am blown away by some of the stuff. It is
nice.
It's very interesting. So. And then there's a third feature that's coming later. This one will actually only be available in the premium subscription. But for now, you can test it for free. So while it's in preview, anyone can actually do this. And what it will do is it uses AI to examine your video, and then it will remove long periods of silence, either automatically, you can just say, yep, do it all, or you can go one by one and kind of see what the change would look and sound like. Wow. So in other words, you've created some kind of a video. It's a finished product.
Right.
But, you know, you have dead periods, right? This is the conversation we just had about SIM cards, right? The video production used to be so prohibitively difficult and expensive that it was only left to professionals. And then we've had, you know, like iMovie and Movie Maker and, you know, things, it's kind of democratized. But now with the addition of AI, you, and of course, advanced capabilities, we see it, iPhones and the incredible video quality they have there. And any individual, this is the democratization of video creation and editing. It's incredible.
It is kind of amazing.
And, yeah.
You know, having, when I was in the early 90s, I worked in TV, used to do a regular weekly edited piece and spent hours, you know, sitting in the edit suite with the editor going, and it was so painful. And I remember thinking at that time, even though the companies are pushing, you might want to do your own editing. This is back in the days of Windows Movie Maker and stuff.
Yeah.
I thought no one's ever going to want to sit through this hell.
It was always the bridge too far.
It's so much work. It did catch on thanks to, you know, better tools and so forth. But it's always been
still
painful.
Hard. I mean, it is still hard. I don't remember. It was right so probably 20, 21, 22 maybe. I was looking at updating the Windows 11 book and I was thinking, you know, one thing that'd be kind of cool is if I could do video explanations of these things, little video, like little clips, you know?
Yeah.
And they could be in the book because it's a digital document. Who cares? And then you click on it in the video. If you're online, you can see the video. And maybe that would be a way that some, instead of reading the book, people could say, I want to see how to do this one thing, go right to the video. And then I looked at like what that would take. And I got really, I mean, I don't mean to say depressed, but it was like, I had this idea and I was like, I just
wouldn't it be cool, but you just can't. That's why do you think,
but that's,
I have
but your wife called me and said, hey, do you want to do this video
for
this thing? And I was like, oh yeah, there you go.
You do it. But that's why, but that's also why we're in financial straits, because I don't, you know, I was never going to do that, but I wanted that. And, and so we have a lot of editors and stuff, and we have a great editor for this show, Kevin King.
Yep.
And they're good. They're really good. I look at my son, Henry, who's become a TikTok, Instagram chef and star. His skill, it's cooking, but this real skill is the editing of the videos he makes. And he literally spends all day doing
this stuff I just described, and any video-related AI wonder that is there or will be there in the future – doesn't necessarily mean that you or I are going to make a Windows ourselves.
Yeah,
that's not
what
this means.
Yeah.
But what it does mean is that for people like Kevin, right, or Benito or anyone else, that this becomes easier and they can focus on, you know, the more important things rather than the rigmarole.
Yeah.
You know, how horrible is it to go through a video of whatever, like this show is 2-3 hours long. I make these goofy little videos of my wife that are 10 minutes long, but whatever. You have video. You in audio, you can't skip over sections of it. You have to go through the whole damn thing.
Bit by bit, yeah.
It's hard and time consuming.
Yeah.
So these things, these are advances. Like this is quality of life stuff for people like Kevin.
Yeah.
You know, it really is.
Yeah. I think Anthony Nielsen, who is kind of our kind of lead and creative guy, is using more and more AI. And in fact, we're using AI now. You probably get these every week after the show. We send you clips. We're using AI to generate those clips. We obviously through it afterwards.
Yeah.
But
these
AI,
are the ones where it kind of does the words. And
you know,
it has all
AI generated.
Right. It's great.
Thanks to Anthony figuring that all out. And it's really great.
How hard would that be to do manually? Think about it.
Oh, God, no.
It's hard to even. I think this is the conceptual hump a lot of people need to get over. Because as I will say, as a writer, I look at the stuff that AI is going to kind of take away, and from one perspective, and I get worried about it. But then I look at how it actually works in Word, let's say, or whatever it might be, or even something as simple as a Grammarly app. I'm using a Markdown text editor, and I can still use an AI service to check my grammar. Check my spelling. I mean, this stuff is transformative, right? I mean, it doesn't mean that I necessarily go away, although, I mean, I will eventually, obviously, but I mean, it doesn't mean like I lose my job today or whatever, but although that AI crap I was talking about in Google News is not helping.
This is such a great conversation, because at the very same time as we're saying how awful AI is, we're saying how great it is.
Yes. If I could leave this earth and deliver one message that people would actually kind of listen to, it is that everything is nuanced. There's no such thing as black and white.
That's true.
There's bad in everything. And and the biggest mistake you can make is to be as far on one fridge as you could possibly be, because as soon as you stop listening or stop paying attention to the gray, you're lost. You know, as a human being, you're just lost.
Yeah, because nothing is black or white. It really isn't.
No, nothing is. Yeah. Nothing.
In fact, I had an epiphany not so long ago that really the key to understanding life is to be able to hold paradoxes in your head.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, here's a simple paradox that people have trouble with. Because I should write a book, it would be called, "But You Said..." And this is my bet. It's like, if I'm ever confronted by the same, like the one phrase the most, it's, but you said, because people hold on to things that we say in the spur of the moment more than I ever could. I don't have a memory for things I spent hours writing. So there is no mutual exclusivity or paradox to the fact that, say, something, you could make two sides of anything. You could say, Google has the best search engine on earth, and Google is a terrible company that is stealing jobs and stealing content from people.
Right.
Those two things can both be true.
Right.
And I think people have a hard time with that.
That's, you know, the funny, Apple thing we brought up earlier. Doing that Amazon survey, it was like, they're horrible. And I love it.
It's like, and they're like, oh, hold on a second. I have to get a package. Oh, it's coming tomorrow. Perfect. All right. Well, what were we saying?
But
oh,
they are horrible.
Yeah. Right. Honestly, that's
what a world.
Something hypocritical there too. But, we all do. You saw it happen. We got next day packages delivered here.
I just saw it.
In Mexico.
Just saw
it. What is this world we live in?
It's amazing.
That's crazy.
I used to say, but you said to John C. Dvorak a lot. And he would always come back. He said, well, Thoreau said, foolish consistency is the hobgoblin of little minds.
Oh, jeez. I love it. And which is honestly a way to say, I guess if you want to be pedantic and never learn and then change your opinions, then I guess you could be that person.
Yes.
But don't be that person. That's a terrible person.
And I learned from John. Yep. All right. Let us
learn from John.
Yes. Honestly. Something. Let us take a little tiny break. And I am still waiting. You think Richard was? Let's check the Richard.
I think in the next 10 minutes, we're going to get, he's going to appear like a genie out of a bottle. Listen, you know how we've been doing this for 15, 18, whatever number of years. You know how dedicated I am to this. I think you know that I literally book every trip I take around this show to make sure I don't miss this, right? I'm dedicated
to
this. But let me tell you something. If I had to fly home from Europe, be home for a day, and then fly to New Zealand, and I got in late and I had to drive 2.5 hours, guess what I wouldn't be doing right now? This show. I'm sorry, like, no offense, but like, that's maybe where I draw the line.
I think that's fine.
And Richard is... he's dedicated in a way that, and maybe he has an energy level I don't have. I don't know, but
I want to correct myself. It is Ralph Waldo Emerson who said, "A foolish consistency is the hobgoblin of little minds, adored by little statesmen and philosophers and divines."
This is the people who refuse to change their opinions when confronted by evidence to the contrary.
Yeah, that's right.
Right?
They're consistent, but they're also foolish.
They're consistently stupid. Is what they are.
All right. More to come. You're watching and listening to Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott, Richard Campbell on the road, but soon here. And we move on now to our AI segment. Wait a minute.
I know.
Wait a minute.
Well, you know what? Look, here's the thing. So there was a period of time last year. Probably don't remember it. It came and went in a flash. But we talked a lot about Activision Blizzard.
Oh, yeah, that. Yeah.
And that was a look, and it will come up again. In fact, it will come up today, but not to that degree, right? I mean, at some point, you know, Activision Blizzard is integrated into Microsoft, and you know, whatever happens, happens. AI is a little different. This may be so big that there will be a point in time where people who like don't today remember that Apple was once called Apple Computer, by the way, because that's all they made, and now is not that, is a gigantic, much, much bigger company that makes all kinds of different things. That Microsoft might be best known as being like the Copilot company, not the Windows company or whatever people still think about.
Wouldn't
today, right?
That be interesting? Yeah.
That's
really interesting.
The Windows thing is already a little past its prime in the sense that Microsoft's cloud-based businesses outstrip Windows by a factor of whatever, 5, 10, 20, I don't know. It doesn't really matter. But the thing that people like me can take a little bit of solace in is that that cloud computing infrastructure, This is all built on Windows, guys. It's Hyper-V. It's, you know, this was all Windows technology. So that's nice. I mean, it's nice for me. It's like people Microsoft. Are excited that Linux is in Android. It's like, see, Linux won. It's like, yeah, it's not. I mean, I see what you're saying, but not exactly right.
Right.
But Copilot, you know, it's Microsoft for years. Bill Gates especially used to do this. Would always talk about betting the company. And he'd be like, yeah, we're coming out with Clippy for Office. We're betting the company.
You're not doing that.
No, that's not true. That's hyperbole. You're just talking.
Yeah.
But Microsoft has never, I don't think, explicitly said we're betting the company on it. But here's the thing. You can see by what they say, because that doesn't mean so much, but what they do and the money they spend, they're betting the company on this. There's no doubt about it. Not that Microsoft would not exist if this failed. It would still continue forward as some kind of a giant Oracle-type terrible company nobody cares about. But they wouldn't be the number one or two biggest company in the world, and they wouldn't be on everyone's mind.
It's interesting.
You know, yeah.
Because they're making the right choice, I think. Meta bet the company on VR and is now regretting the switching. Apple is a little late to the party, still thinks VR is going to be...
Richard is setting up as we speak.
Oh, I love Richard. All right.
So, I would never do what he's doing.
Continue on while he's not here and you have the chance.
So, today was the one-year anniversary. Actually, I think it was 2 days ago. Whatever. We're roughly at the one-year anniversary of the day that Yusuf Mehdi stepped out on the stage and talked about whether the time was Bing Chat. I think we can all agree was the stupidest, you know, name and market forward, whatever. But anyway, they course corrected on that. So here we are 12 months later. There was a lot of promise, a lot of announcement, but there have also been a lot of actual product releases and maybe more important, a lot of product updates, right? All along the way, the core capabilities of Microsoft Copilot have advanced again and again and again. They've shipped actual shipping subscription service products like Copilot Pro and Copilot Microsoft 365, and there are going to be many more to come, Dynamics, et cetera, all over the place. They have their own little milestones. They talk about, you know, 5 billion chats, 5 billion images created. I'm going to put this in air quotes because it's nonsense, but sustained growth in Bing and Edge share, not really, right? I mean, not really, but okay. But the fact of the matter is they've created something I think that actually, I mean, it's kind of weird to say, it feels sustainable, like it feels real. And as more and more competitors arrive, as they would, and that, you know, the OpenAIs, the world, Google, of course, right? Amazon, eventually Apple, eventually, but these companies are all going to steal share to some degree. But Microsoft's historic advantages, first with Office productivity software, which they turned successfully into services, and then with cloud computing, I think gives them an edge that, pardon the pun, that their competitors just can't duplicate. There's, you know, it's rather astonishing. And so, you know, this past year has been, if AI hadn't happened, I keep saying this, like I would have done an end of year recap where I would have talked about all these things, big and small, that were big deals, like Activision Blizzard, $69 billion, whatever it was, big deal, right? There's a lot of little stories, lots of themes, lots of kind of interesting stuff that occurs in any given year, I guess. But last year, it was AI just blew it all away. It was like AI, and then there's a little one pixel size thing on the corner for the rest of it. It really doesn't matter in some ways. AI is everything. AI is the AI is I know it's the force that drives Microsoft forward. It's the way they continue the momentum that they got with Wall Street from cloud computing. It's the way they just became the biggest company in the world. With a $3 trillion market cap, plus now 3.2, I think it is now, or whatever. It's just astonishing.
It is so amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's really amazing.
There's a Super Bowl ad they're putting out. It's not now.
That's how you know it's real. They're going to do a Super Bowl ad. Well,
now. Because they haven't thrown enough money at AI. They're going to do this now. And then they've also announced some updates, which, you know, I probably can't access because I'm in Mexico. So there's a Copilot App Store coming to the standalone apps on iOS and Android. Major UX upgrade, which I can see and you can see now. If you go to copilot.microsoft.com, you can see that kind of streamlined UI, make, you know, nicer. Inline image editing, meaning the way these things work today is if you use Copilot to generate an image and you look at the image, it kind of pushes you off to Designer, what used to be called Bing Image Creator. Now you can do it right there in the chat interface and you can, you know, change the image, tell it to take the tree out or add the thing or whatever, just make it, you know, a different aspect ratio, whatever. Although actually you have to pay for that. And then, yeah, that feature I just mentioned is a new feature of Copilot Pro. So When Copilot Pro first launched last month, the not just the default, I believe the only thing you could do was make landscape 16:9 images, whereas before, remember, they were square on the free version. Now, in Copilot Pro, you'll be able to switch between those kind of things. So I think that's kind of cool. This one I don't quite understand, but the image creator that used to be part of Bing is now Microsoft Designer. And Microsoft Designer is a sort of Adobe Express competitor, Canva competitor, if that makes sense. You know, you go there, you're a small business owner, you make flyers and logos and whatever. They pulled the AI image, you know, the ChatGPT-4, whatever, DALL-E 3 image creation capabilities out of, well, it's not out of Bing, but it's now technically part of this Designer product. So you can go, I think it's probably designer.microsoft.com, whatever. It's a PWA, you can install it, blah, blah, blah. But they're going to introduce something called Designer GPT inside Copilot soon. And this is, I'm trying to understand what this means. It just says it's an immersive, dedicated canvas inside of Copilot. So wherever you get your Copilot, where you can visualize your ideas. And I guess it just means, I think it just means you'll be doing that designer thing inside of Copilot. I guess it's like essentially a plugin so that you don't have to leave the environment, I guess is probably what, that's my guess. So big year for AI, for sure.
So what is, have you seen the Super Bowl ad or?
I have not. I actually like footballs, right? So the Super Bowl to me, I feel like the ad quality has been either declining or we're just so used to it, it's not as interesting anymore. But I do watch the game to see both things, right? And this year, at least, I know you think San Francisco is going to win. I agree with you. But at least it's two of the best teams in the league. It isn't always.
No, it's going to be
And there
fun.
There are many examples of a horrible team getting in at like 9-7 or whatever, and like winning the Super Bowl somehow. And it's like, this is the problem with one game playoffs. But okay, whatever. We're not here to talk about football. But the Super Bowl is football and this stuff, you know? So I'm just saving it for that. I'll just enjoy it.
Well, I won't show it. Close
your
eyes.
Okay. It's okay. No,
I don't know. Will they take us down if I show it? I don't even know.
It's an advertisement. You're advertising a Microsoft. You're selling out.
I feel like that's the case, but golly, you know,
I don't know.
These guys, they're so funny on the old YouTube. All right. Well, I'll just play a little bit of it. How about that? All right.
Is that a Detroit Lions thing in the middle? What's going on here?
What is that? I'm not getting the audio. Well, that's probably good. They won't take us down. But this is going to be a Super Bowl. I think it's intriguing.
I've never seen it work that fast, by the way.
They're just cutting that part out.
Yeah.
I think they probably, to me, what this is saying is AI's ready for the people, right? And they need to know that now, right?
Yeah. Think about what we just saw, even that little thing right there, right? So. Yeah.
That was it, by the way. It's only 30 seconds.
Oh, okay.
$7 million. And it
probably was, I was going to say $7 million.
Yeah.
So if you use a text-based interface, and remember when this first started, the big kind of question was like, wait, I'm sorry, are we going back to a command line here? What is this? So you have to type out a description and then you get some results for them. And you're like, well, that's not exactly what I want. And then they add the ability, well, you can keep talking to it, typing to it.
Exactly.
And you can modify it. You can say, okay, I like this picture, but remove the tree on
that's
the hill.
That's what it's doing in Designer, I think. I'm sure.
It is, but the thing that you just showed is making it more like a typical GUI app, right? If you go into Microsoft Paint today, you can click a button and remove the background from an image, right? And so, or you've used like Google Photos in your Pixel phone, you can go in and tap on a person and magic erase them out of the image, right? And I think what you were showing there was that kind of advance inside. So in other words, we've generated an image of some kind. Maybe it's not quite what you want. So you're like, now you can go in and actually tap on stuff. And maybe you can move an item around or remove it from the image. Like, this is perfect, but I didn't want that one guy flying in the sky or whatever it might be. So that's what that looks like.
That's what Google's been showing for years, you know,
with
their Pixel ads.
Right,
I guess
right.
Maybe that's what people want. That's what they think of AI being useful.
Right.
And by the way, that's Apple's position is, you don't want a chat thing. You just.
I think they're right about that.
Yeah. You just want us to help you fix your pictures.
The A year ago, I wrote this thing called This is Windows 12, and it had whatever. This came out of the conversation we had at the time, whether Windows 12 would require an MPU, or maybe there would be features in Windows 12 that would require an MPU, or maybe those features would just work better if you had an MPU, that kind of thing. It was just kind of a debate at the time. And I sort of saw this kind of thing kind of happening, right? Like this notion of... I actually, before Stephen Patish said that thing, I had this notion of like, it will be this thing over here on the side, you know, that kind of helps you do the thing. And like this, like a helper, like we had not like Clippy, like a thing, not annoying with, I can't think of his name, that horrible comedian's voice, Gilbert Gottfried, but you know, something that would be truly helpful. Like what, when you think about AI and how it could improve like Windows, it's hard to find little individual tasks where it makes a lot of sense. But if you think about Windows as the platform where you run the apps, maybe this thing runs as an orchestrator where you say, you tell it, I want to do something, right? Not just make an image like with a unicorn, but I want to create a flyer that has these elements, or I need to communicate with a group of people that's sort of a newsletter, whatever it might be, that it could say, okay, you're going to use this, or I'm going to use the system. We'll say, I'm going to use this for this. I'm going to use this for this. I'm going to use this for this. And we're going to spit something out. And Windows, you didn't use a part of Windows to create any of those things, but Windows was the thing that orchestrated it, right? And then when you see that final element, you can say, okay, this is good, but I need it to be this instead or something. And same thing, we'll just go and use all the elements. And it's here. Like, yeah. This is happening right now. The notion, like, the thing that's weird about Copilot and Windows is that the notion of a sidebar is going to be out of date so quickly, we might wonder why they even bothered. You know, I think apps are just going to catch up. That the real value of Windows in this equation is that orchestrator thing I was talking about, which not a unique idea. Well, I did write this last February, but this was the thing that Stevie Batiste talked about. It was the third of the three models. And by the way, what was the example he used? Does anyone remember? It was Clipchamp.
Oh, was it? I didn't know that.
Also File Explorer, but Clipchamp, yeah. As an example of a new kind of app that did these things for you in the background. And you just don't have to worry about where this stuff comes from.
So as you pointed out, this has been a year. Have you watched the Batiste talk again since?
I've watched it many times because what happens, so I read a weekly column on Friday where people ask me questions, you know, and I've had to reference it so many times. I feel like I could give the speech up to including the part where he's like, I have to get going quickly because I have to take a flight. You know, like I've watched it a lot, and I've never stopped being impressed by the clarity of the thing he described.
As we watched him do it, we felt that way. I remember. Oh my God.
And it was exaggerated because he came on after
Panos Panay,
who had tanked in a way that was epic. I mean, even for him. And the contrast was so sharp.
Well, in fact,
it was like, this is what clarity looks like. Why is this guy not on stage?
That was the talk for, that was the most important.
I think
part
so. That was the, I've never heard anyone from Microsoft or anyone else describe this as clear.
And does it hold up a year later? Does what he talked about hold up?
So it does, but I guess what I'm kind of working toward here is like, step one is a sidebar. It's a side by side experience. It's a co-pilot. But I actually think we're going to move past that very quickly, at least visually, because we're not going to need this thing on the side, unless that's how Microsoft does the UI for the orchestrator, because that stuff's just going to be built into everything. Richard, you're an insane person.
He's here, ladies and gentlemen. He's here. I'll tell you what, while we push the buttons to make Richard appear, I will. We'll take a little break. I'll talk about Club Twit, and then Richard Campbell will join us just in time. I had prepared my own brown liquor pick of the week, but...
Oh, I thought that was a bottle of bitters. We were going to do the Leo's Bitters pick of the week.
There he is, ladies and gentlemen. Bitters. Richard.
Hello.
Hello. So you might laugh at this, but I was going to show this Nika whiskey, single malt, peaty and salty whiskey that Russell brought us back.
Yeah. Peaty and salty.
Peaty and salty.
I'm hoping to be the Bill Murray of Topo Chico. He's going to be my next endorsement.
So awesome.
Anyway, I don't need to now because Richard's here. Let's take a little break. You guys could talk amongst yourselves. And we will, we're glad to say, have a brown liquor pick this week. Richard Campbell got here. A long road. And Paul, before you got here, Paul was saying,
a little pass on the way.
How dedicated you are. Paul would have long ago said, yeah, screw it.
I would have been like, screw you guys. just no offense, but.
Hold on. We'll talk in just a bit. But first, I do want to talk a little bit about something that's become very important to us in the future. We talked about, you know, the plight that journalism's going through and with AI and so forth. It's funny because at the same, and this is exactly the paradox that Paul and I were talking about, at the same time as we can bemoan, you know, the death of journalism and AI's intrusion into the world of knowledge and so forth, at the same time as all that's happening, we also think that there is something really important going on that we need to talk about. And maybe I'm flattering myself and our hosts, but I think you need us to talk about it too. This is the place to come to for that information, reliable, trustworthy information, as we head into something pretty unknown, into this new age. And it's the reason I think I mean, look, I'm old enough. I've saved enough. I could retire. I don't have to keep doing this. But I want to. I think we have something to say. I think, you know, Steve Gibson kind of said the same thing. He was planning to end in just about a year from now. And actually a little less than a year, isn't it? He was about to wind things up and he decided to keep going. We still have stuff to say. We have some very important things to talk about. But we need to do it with your help because, frankly, there is a crisis right now in funding journalism and funding the kind of things we do. Advertisers just, they seem to have moved on. They want to do influencers. They want to do YouTube. They're going to Google and Facebook. The audience is getting more fragmented. So we need your help. If you do watch or listen to our shows and you care about what we're doing and you want us to keep doing it, you need to vote, basically, with your dollars. It's not a lot, $7 a month. You can do more if you feel like it. And because we know a lot of you can't afford that or don't want to spend that, I promise we're going to continue to offer free stuff. But the good stuff is going to more and more be for the club members. Club Twit is ad-free versions of all of our shows. More shows now than before that are inside Club Twit, behind the wall. Like iOS Today, they've moved that behind the wall. Home Theater Geeks, Scott Wilkinson, Paul does that great hands-on Windows. Lots of Clip Champ stuff there. Micah does the hands-on Macintosh. All of that is part of your club membership. My personal feeling, the best part of the membership, well, that stuff's pretty good too. But I love the Discord. I love hanging in the Discord. It's a great hang. It's a social network that's more than just chatting about the shows. It's chatting about everything we geeks care about. And there's a lot of good stuff in there, including we have our own Minecraft server. We have our own Midjourney server. We have lots of conversations about AI and about coding and all sorts of stuff. And there's the Twit Plus feed with additional content that we don't put out. I think that this is worth it. We're really trying to make it worth it. And we hope we're worth it to you. If we are, twit.tv/clubtwit. It would make us very happy. twit.tv/clubtwit. Thank you very much in advance for your support. Now, let's turn the mics back on so you guys can talk again.
Richard, my voice thanks you.
Yeah, you've been talking too much, I'm sure. And I don't know that it's even on topic, but really there's this, you're looking at how poorly the influencer marketing thing is going for folks.
Oh yeah. Advertisers are getting burned, but
you figure, you know, we started .NET Rocks back in 2002, which was before the word podcast even existed. Like, we've been through all the incarnations of this and we're still doing the thing.
Right.
We love doing it. And there have been certainly easier years and harder years. But, you know, one of the reasons to persist, because when you keep doing a thing you love and it's easier to keep doing it, people come back around. And I'm wondering if we're not just not that far away from the big swing.
I kind of hope that's – I think you're right. I hope you're right.
I got to hope so. So, Leah, it's weird that you just mentioned this, because we were walking back from lunch. And Richard had been texting me, and I'm like, I'm on my own today. I have mixed feelings about this, and Stephanie literally said to me, she goes, how come, she goes, why does Leo still do this? And I'm like, what do you mean? I was literally like, I don't even, what are you talking about? And she's like, well, I wouldn't still be. And I'm like, yeah, but I would. I think it's because he likes it. You know, I mean, I think.
Weird.
I don't think he's waiting to pick up a check every week. It's not like
tell Stephanie. I ask myself that every night. Okay. When I go to bed.
Well, we all have our moments of doubt, but I think what Richard just said ties into this. Like,
it's there important. Is a, gosh darn it. Yes.
You have a purpose.
Yes. Yeah.
I feel right. Do I love a ridiculous boondoggle, like flying, 15 hours and then driving 3 hours just to catch tail into this? And yeah, no, I love a ridiculous boondoggle.
You're pretty committed. Do. You're pretty. Hey, what town are you in? I just have you in New Zealand.
I'm back in Tauranga. I'm back at the farm. In fact, I'll flip the preset around. You remember this. You might even remember this view. Because this is the view of the yearling yard.
Oh, this is the Hobbiton view.
Oh, yeah. My goodness gracious.
Yeah. So holy that's where the cow. That's where the babies hang out. But the further down to the south is
as I explained last time I was here, and I think you were there, I said I could flip mine around and there's nothing to see. And I have flipped it around because what's behind me now is what I used to look at and there's nothing to see.
Yeah.
Because we're inside. I'm in a bunker.
I'm back in the real Hobbiton. The green rolling hills. This is the family farm. And I'm going to get a few days to spend with my family. I'm going to get to see my mom before I go back to work in Sydney.
I like that you're talking about spending time with your family and it's like almost wistful. Whereas I think to myself, if I had to go back to Boston and spend time with my family, I'd probably slit my wrist. Like it's sort of a different
couple of times a year. Right?
And yeah.
This is where you grew up, Richard, or?
No, I was born here. I left when I was a baby, when I was three. So,
but they kept the farm.
Well, they're fine. Yeah, the farm predates me. You know, this is my married into family, the Knee family, and the roads around here. Knee Road is down the hill. They were original Scottish immigrants, and so this is
so
fourth generation dairy here.
I'm so
it's
jealous
different.
Of both you guys.
The town has grown around it, but it is beautiful.
It's a whole new take on the word pasteurized.
Yeah. Richard has been pasteurized.
My uncle Graham is in his middle 80s and he still hikes down to the milking yard every morning and he scoops a couple of quarts of raw milk out of the vat and downs it and then walks back up the hill. He'll take a nap after that. Running of the farm.
He'll take a day off after that. So good for him.
Yeah. Mel and Janelle run the farm now, so it's all good.
It must feel good, though. You must have a kind of almost a sigh of relaxation.
Idea. And as soon as I turn onto Ohoeetee, which is the Ohoeetee Settlers Road, and realize part of my family were the Ohoeetee Settlers,
right?
So yeah, no, there's something. I passed the spot where I was born. I was actually born in a house, but the house is gone. It's a townhouse development now.
Oh, geez.
And it's sad. There's something in my bones here. You know, this is very, very much feels like home. I don't think you've been to the coast place, Paul. You know, we're not suffering there either.
Yeah,
but they're very different from each other.
You do like remote places.
You do, yes.
And now with the internet, he's a wise man. You can be anywhere.
That's really
you would miss this, Richard, but we were just talking about various technical advances that makes different things possible. eSIMs and foreign countries and low-cost connectivity, yada, yada, yada. I mean, those same advances are what enable you to do what you're doing right now, but also to be living where you're living right now. Like, I mean, otherwise, it wouldn't be
the same things. Yeah. It would be very different. I have great concerns with Elon Musk these days. I don't think I'm the only one. But that 5,000 satellite network with its multi-laser beams, like it literally is an episode of The Spy Who Shagged Me, but it gives you 400 plus megabits per second anywhere.
What's beautiful
in the world.
About that is that that also ties into that nuance thing that you missed where, not everything is black and white. So he's destroying the night sky for everybody, but connectivity.
So you're on Starlink now?
No, I think we've got Starlink back up here. They've got fiber.
Okay. But you are on Starlink when you're in BC.
On the coast, I have fiber and Starlink as well.
Wow. You're well equipped.
Yeah, now we've got all the things.
Anyway, what were we talking about, Paul? We're talking about AI. We're in the AI section.
Yeah. So the next thing was the Arc browser. So we talked this, you know, again, we got ahead of ourselves a little bit, but sometime between last week's show and today, the folks, you know, the browser company had their big event where they announced three new features, all AI based for the desktop version of the browser, one of which emulates that browse for me feature you were just showing off with the mobile version of the browser, or the mobile app version. And you know, this kind of interesting ethical debate over, okay, this is really good functionality. This is what people want. I just want the answer to the question, whatever. But now we're not driving traffic to the content creator that maybe answered that question in the first place, kind of a thing. So it's okay if it's a fact, you know, what day of the week is Tuesday, you know, is April 13th, 1987 or whatever. You know, nobody owns that information, but kind of an, if people haven't seen it, I actually think the video they did was a little, I know they're trying
I
to.
I couldn't
make,
bring you know, myself waves. To watch it. I'm as it, which it, is ironic because I'm very interested in the content.
It's a little too much personality.
Yeah.
I think is what I'm. Yeah. It's not my thing. I don't mean to disparage them or what they're trying to do. By the way, my website made a little appearance in there because he, the guy doing the demo, the guy, the CEO of the company, showed the, my review in his browser. You know, so which is interesting. They never reached out to me, dicks. But anyway,
that's
that was
nice.
You know,
no, that's, nice.
That's cool. No, that was cool. Yeah, it was cool. We talked about Arc already, so I think we kind of actually covered this already, but it is very interesting that this is a browser that is unlike any other browser. And now either again, be with great foresight or just luck, they have pivoted to AI and are integrating that into their products in also a unique way, not as kind of a tacked on thing like we see with, you
but
know,
talk the, about an industry that was begging for disruption.
Yep.
Everything was consolidating on Chrome, and that's not a great outcome.
Well, so the way I would put it is they're actually using Chromium, by the way. So oh. The way we did, but because we talked about this early in the show out of band, so to speak, but the you could pick any browser. Okay, what is it? Opera, Vivaldi, Brave, DuckDuckGo, you know, pick your browser. It looks like every other browser. It looks like browser. You could hold up a picture of Netscape in 1996. You've got an address bar, buttons for navigation, and you know a big space for the web page. It's they really browsers have not changed, and you're right. I think the it's not something I would have come up with independently, right? But now that I see what they're doing, you know, in a Monday morning quarterback kind of a sense, I agree with you 100%. Yeah, this is the browser. I mean, when Windows 7 was still an ongoing concern, Steven right. Sinofsky told me, and I probably the world that. The biggest app, the most frequently used app on Windows was Chrome. And it was bigger than everything else combined. And that when you factored in all other web browsers, including Microsoft's, it was almost like the rest of the world didn't exist. That it was 10 or 15, I don't remember the exact number, but it was a really tiny percentage of app usage that wasn't web browsers. And that was part of the reason behind this web-centric Windows 8, you know, get rid of the Chrome and let them show them the content kind of mentality. It all came up out of the web. Like, how do we leverage and, you know, Sinofsky extend, leverage and extinguish the, you know, the underlying technologies that we are inspired by because of what we've seen out in the world. And this is, we're talking over 10 years ago, right? It's a long time ago, but it's very interesting to move forward. No one has been that transparent about that kind of thing anymore at Microsoft. So we don't know what percentage of apps run on Windows today, Windows 10, Windows 11, are web browsers, nor do we know which percentage are web apps. But I think kind of anecdotally, I think we can all agree that it's a huge percentage in both cases and that more and more workloads are moving to the web. We just talked about Clipchamp as a kind of a, not a goofy version, but a really approachable video editing app that is a web app, which is, it's a crazy combination of capabilities, right? So the notion that we maybe we should pay a little bit more attention to this thing. I mean, even something like Chrome OS, where you can kind of look at this and say, wow, I mean, this company made an OS, a lightweight OS and, you know, Linux really, whatever, but a lightweight OS built around the browser. Sounds like I'm a hammer, so everything's a nail kind of a deal because, you know, they're all web-based there. But at the end of the day, that thing is very familiar as a web browser, right? It's still, it's just a web browser. I think the central genius, we'll see, of ARC is similar. We had this conversation, Rich. I'm sorry. I'm just kind of catching up because I think you appreciate this. Is very much like what Microsoft did with Windows Phone 7, where they really looked at this thing and said, everyone's doing this, but let's actually think about this and not just do something different for the sake of something doing something different, but actually try to make something that's better.
Well, and everybody else has gone towards the Windows Phone design, right? I mean, at the time when Windows Phone skeuomorphic was the thing, and they, you know, for better or worse, and you can point who is Belfiore or anybody else. It's like, who sort of said, eventually this seems silly, and you go for these simpler platforms.
Material design at Google is the next two generations of Metro. I mean, you can say whatever you want, and I know that guy came from Palm originally, and but that's the lineage. There's no doubt about it. And so, as a fan of this now dead platform, does this give me a little sense of peace or happiness? No, I hate it. But that's the reality. I just think it's fascinating that something as mature as a web browser, something that's so important, like literally, arguably more important than anything else, you know, a computer or even a phone, even, although I know the apps are huge, whatever. But those apps, I mean, other than the artificial restrictions that Apple has put in place, which overflows into Android, because Android and Google would have gone in this web app direction, but they, you know, people want to make apps that run everywhere, so they use cross-platform Flutter, React, whatever instead. I think it already would have taken over the world, you know. So here's this little company, it's, I don't know, 6-8 people or something, it's tiny, and they're thinking differently about this, and not just like I said, not just different to be different, but like, let's step through this, like, how can we make this better? And, you know, there are complexities to it. That was one of the things I talked about.
Well, and like, you know, one of the things is Chromeless, which is hilarious, considering the name. I know.
Exactly.
Yep. But I remember when Chrome came out as the less chromed browser compared to IE. Yep.
That's right. I mean, honestly, so because I've been writing about this security stuff lately, I have Chrome. Actually, it's this computer. This computer, I actually, no, it isn't. I'm sorry. It doesn't matter. I have Chrome configured as my default browser, but also my default for other things. I'm using the Google Password Manager. I'm just trying to understand these configurations. And, you know, compared to Edge, Google Chrome is like a bicycle compared to like a 757 cockpit or whatever.
Yeah.
It's not, there's some stuff, but it's not overwrought. But yeah, there's a lot of
stuff. Still pretty cluttered. Then you sit and look at ARC and it's a different league again, right?
It's a different, my God, it's from a different planet. I mean,
the thing that frustrates me about this whole thing is this could have been Edge.
Yeah, this was Edge. That was the promise.
That was one of the points.
Right? I would say Edge, you know, Google obviously added function. Okay, they whether you consider that bloat or not, you know, we can debate, but
one person's functionality is another person's bloat, right? Like, it's a natural iteration as we keep adding features and
this is so
bigger diversity, and can never take anything out because you
don't. I did a set of over the course of 3 or 4 years did two studies about Microsoft Signature PC program, and the key takeaway was that 9 out of 10 people agreed that a clean minimalist computer with no bloatware or crapware was ideal, and that the other one out of ten was this guy saying, I just like more stuff. the more stuff, the better.
Yeah.
Well, and
then you go look at Word and say, like, how many more stuff people do you have?
I know. So look, there's something for everyone. Not to keep recapping the show for you, I'm sorry, but
yeah,
you know, we were in the discussion of web browsers. I mean, it came up like Vivaldi is an example of a product that I it's fine and can be configured in a way that is pretty ideal, but it's also very complex because there's so much stuff. And I think it just appeals to a certain type of person, where someone like me might look at, you know, Brave, which doesn't do almost any UI work. In fact, in the past week or two, there's a small visual change to the way that pinned tabs appear now. And I have to tell you, it's a little off-putting to me because like the UI never changes. And I'm like, oh, well, what's about, you know, what are they doing there? You know, like, there's something for everyone, right? So yeah, you're right. You're one man's garbage is another man's treasure.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Let's talk. I'm so done with Copilot. Let's talk about Bard.
Thank you. So Google, the sense was that Google rushed Bard out as an announcement because of what Microsoft announced with what at the time was called Bing Chat.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
They kind of tripped, fell, hit the rake, did the whole thing. It was embarrassing. But Bard, you know, it's
continuing. Although I almost think it was unfairly done too, because
I could not agree.
What they did was mismanage the PR on an incomplete product, and Microsoft managed the PR on their incomplete product far better.
So I almost think it was a matter of circumstance and timing. Because Microsoft came out of the gate, you had goons like Kevin Roos over it. I'm going to switch to Bing. Like, no, you're not. And then 3 days goes by and he's like, oh my God, this thing's threatening to kill me now. I'm like, I told you. But Google
you are also torturing it, so okay.
Yeah. Google didn't make as many mistakes as Bing did during their respective demonstrations. You can go back and look this up. It's just that Bing came out first, so we were like, oh my God, oh my God. By the time Google did it again, we're like, wait a minute, that's fake. And like, Bing did the same thing. Like,
and arguably, if they hadn't done it, we would have been second-thoughting about Bing rather than second-thoughting about them.
The thing I would just remind people, and I literally will right now, is that Google has been doing this AI stuff for a long time. They didn't rush it to market, partially for commercial reasons. They had a hard time understanding how you replace this thing that's generating 70% of the revenues now and not lose any money, right? So they've actually had this for a while. So now, to this day, Bard is very much like Copilot. It's something you can pay for as part of Workspace, and I think Google Cloud separately, like much like we have different versions of Copilot. And then late last year, earlier than people expected, but we knew this was coming, they came out with their most sophisticated AI models yet, which they branded as Gemini. And there were three tiers, remember? The low tier Nano was the one they could put on the phone. They put it on the Pixel. And then a couple of weeks ago, they announced it's on the Samsung Galaxy S24s as well, the whole family, I think, all three of them. And there's a Gemini, I think it's just Gemini in the middle, and then like a Gemini Pro, I think it's called at the high end. And, just to meet different demands, whatever.
You presume that what's running on the phone is just a smaller set, but hopefully they're using that Tensor processor. You would hope.
Right. Yeah. Look, whether that is artificial and it could work anywhere, I mean, who knows? Honestly,
I think it probably can work anywhere.
I'm sure the GPU built
in. Is it faster?
Right. I don't,
I'm working hard on Llama running.
Yeah. We're not going to know the answer to that.
Home Assistant. And I'm like, I need more hardware for my.
The problem I have with this stuff right now is more tied to the notion that the features you get are very scattershot. So, for example, you might get like a live translate feature in messages, but not in WhatsApp or whatever. Right. I don't like that kind of thing. This speaks to the fact that this is not yet a platform feature that developers can just tie into. You have to explicitly go and partner and make it happen, and something like that. So it's going to be like that for a little while. But
doesn't this beg to the whole idea of this should be part of the operating system?
Yeah. No, that's exactly. Yeah. No, that's 100%. Yep. Which is why, on one level, I actually do appreciate that Samsung partnered with Google on this rather than doing it themselves. Not because, look, maybe they're not capable of doing it themselves, but the last thing we need is like the world's biggest Android OEM doing their own thing on AI, which, yes, just like Dex, that capability of making your phone, connecting it USB-C, go to a big display, that should be in the OS. Now, Google's never done anything to make that happen, but I want that from Google. I don't want that from Samsung, right? I mean, that's how I want that.
What we don't want is everybody who wants to play in this space to set up yet another LLM.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. There should be a thing. I might steal that for an article title. So that's a good term. I like that. But Gemini, I think, is brands are hard, right? We can agree to that. Bard, the connotation there with William Shakespeare that I think many people don't get. And this idea, it's generative AI, it's creating words, right?
Yeah, no, and I love the name. I'm sad they're giving it up.
Yeah, but Gemini, I think subjectively is in some ways a better brand, not because it has a better connotation with AI, but I think as a word, it feels like something out of Star Trek.
A little more spacier.
Yeah. And I think
a little more 22nd century, a little less 14th.
Fair enough. Right. Star Trek 3, not Star Trek 4, but whatever. It's okay. I think was that planet called Genesis? No, it was Genesis.
Genesis, yes.
Anyway.
I think Google AI V'ger might be a good name.
There you go. Perfect. No, that's the new word. That's what Bing should become is V'ger.
V'ger.
There you go.
Yeah, the most hated. I love it. Voyage is beautiful. It's funny. This is not official, but people have seen it in a change log for a coming version of Bard that will ship this month. And it's there are so many indications this is happening. I think we could be pretty safely say they're switching the Google Bard brand to Gemini. It's interesting.
I think that's actually a better brand. I really do, to be honest.
Yeah. I also think like one of the big mistakes Google made from a branding perspective was not to give their assistant a name. And if the rumors are true, these are a little further out, this notion that their assistant might basically become like be replaced by this essentially. Like, if not, I mean, to date, we've sort of thought, well, maybe they'll augment it with it, but it seems like maybe they might be getting rid of that as well. I think that might be smart too, because I think having a good brand, something people can remember and will want, you know, hey, you know, is a, it's a little bit of a throat blocker, you know, like it's a hard thing to say in some ways. It's like, so maybe this will be a little better. I don't know. And then there's some other, just quickly, I mean, there's a generative AI feature coming to Maps. People,
I mean, I don't want to speak smallly about that because Google Maps is like the only Maps, right?
That's
like,
right. That's right.
Nobody else would dare. They own Waze. So the fact that, I mean, I navigated here on Google Maps.
This is, I'm just to see if I can quickly find this. I think I have a, we're going to talk a little bit about some social networking stuff later in the show, but when I look at social networks from a really from a kind of a professional perspective, the big one for me is Twitter. I think I have like 127,000 followers, whatever. And these little
Your
networks
product doesn't exist anymore.
I know. please don't get me started. When I look at these other things, it's like, well, how do I replace this? And like, how does that happen? You know, it's hard. So we have these other networks; they're not as big, whatever. And I'm having trouble finding this thing I wanted to tell you about. But anyway, I'll just short version is my biggest social network, arguably, is actually Google Maps.
Right.
And it's not because of work-related things, but because of my reviews and photos have been viewed by something like, I don't know if it's 29 or 49. I think it might be 49 million people. It's like it's 49 million times. Like it's
pictures the scope of cocktails,
and, yep. Restaurants. But I mean, but people, I have had business owners in my area thank me personally because they see the results of a good picture of a meal, a positive review of a guy who fixed the car or whatever it might be. Like this is, there's a real one-to-one thing happening here. Well, I guess it's not one-to-one, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
B2C kind of a thing, B2C to B or B2C to B to B, whatever it is. That I think is important. And a lot of people, when you hear generative AI and maps, you're thinking, what are they? They're going to do like an Apple Maps thing where they send you to places that don't exist. And that's not what that is, right? What they're doing is everyone's done this. You get out of a metro station somewhere in some foreign city, or you're on some vacation in an unfamiliar area or familiar, it doesn't matter. And the thing you thought you were going to go to with your kids is closed.
Right.
Or whatever it might be. And you're like, okay, I got a map. Let's find something, right? And finding something on Google Maps is about as fun as finding a show to watch on Netflix. Mm. There's a lot of stuff there.
Yeah.
It's not easy.
And if you know
everyone gets mad at each other.
Yeah. Navigating it isn't better.
So what this is going to do is use AI. You can say, I'm looking for something fun to do with the kids. Maybe it's action, outdoor oriented, whatever. Boop, boop, boop. And it comes up with answers to that. And honestly, that's a fantastic use for AI.
Yeah, so if using a large language model to parse the descriptions of the facilities in an area and that same language model against your request to just have a better language experience. Like there's been language interface or voice interfaces on Maps for a long time. You just learn not to use it because it makes you sad.
Right, exactly. We've talked about this kind of review summary thing, which we're starting to see everywhere now. Right? Google Maps was actually one of the first services I can remember that was doing this, where it's kind of a people said. You see this in Amazon reviews. Like at the top, we'll say people said they really like this product, but this is the downside or whatever it might be. Like this is a good use for AI. Something simple like I'm really in the mood for seafood, or I specifically want scallops or whatever. That's not so hard, you know, but I'm here with like a, you know, I'm in a different country. I'm with another couple maybe, or my kids. And we have this, we thought we were doing this thing. We were all prepped for it and it's not happening. And that's a little more complicated. And actually it sounds good to me.
I would argue that Google is going to have a problem with quality of data, you know,
yeah.
because, you know, the hamburger shop in Seychelles flooded and Google doesn't know.
Or so there'll be people who flood reviews as they do, and they tilt the scale a little bit, and then you end up in a dark alley in Tokyo and you're like, this isn't the sushi restaurant I thought I was going to.
Well, somebody's going to be fish, but I don't know.
You'll be swimming with the fishes. So,
right. Okay. I'm glad it's a logical addition. And I actually think it's an important one just because maps is one of, you know, you can question many things that that Google builds over time. You can't question maps. Everybody counts on it.
Well, okay. So you're right. But I will say you can see the insertification of this because already in Google Maps, we've seen this, right?
Oh,
it's like these square pins that they're paid for.
Yes.
And you could sort of imagine that these results will also be tailored by sponsoring.
Yeah, no, they've definitely damaged their product over time as they try to make money from it. But this feature has the possibility to actually be beneficial to the regular consumer as well as them. And that's as much as you can hope for.
I mean, it's not as good as the ribbon they added to Office, but it's up there, you know. Oh, boy. I'm just trying to think, like, how much of a Microsoft toady could I be?
Wow.
I think that would be that. I think I just hit the bell at the top of the scale.
Oh, like 17 years ago.
On this show alone, I have brought up Clippy, Windows Phone twice, and now the Office. Like, what else? Like, what, I mean, Zune is next. They wait for that. Zune is coming.
Next week in Sydney, one of them is from Mono to Maui. So I'm doing that history thing.
Okay.
So Xamarin, like, up there too.
The insertification of Xamarin. It should be the name of a talk. Okay. So I'm kidding. Don't do that. Related to this, Google also launched something called ImageFX. This is their designer / image creator / DALL-E / everything else, right? Generative AI image generation tool, right? So, okay. Right. We know that everyone's going to catch up.
It's also Meta, part of unifying together these various AI stores.
It's important that Google has for workspace customers what Microsoft has for Microsoft 365 customers with a commensurate level of less, right? Like, I just think that's important. But
the whole point here is if you're going to go to the trouble of chatting with a bot, it should do all the things.
Yes, that's right. Yep. And then Meta, which owns, you know, Facebook and what else? Instagram, WhatsApp. They own everything, I guess. Has announced that they're going to start labeling AI-generated images on its services. A lot of this, I think, has to do with political stuff. We're obviously a big election year.
You'd hope so.
You don't want them to undermine our democracy like they did in 2016. Well,
but you're already seeing these stories of computer-generated voices of the candidates. Yeah. Communicating inaccurate, you know, literally opposite message. Like, it's happening.
That's right. Yep. So, I mean, I think that's just the responsible part.
I always thought Facebook, before they metastasized.
Metastasized. Nice.
Before they metastasized, they could have been the clearinghouse for real news. Like, if they had done the background research, if everything was tagged, if you could have set priorities on what you wanted to look, like, they could have given you an accurate view of what was going on.
So, Richard, I feel compelled to catch you up on another thing from earlier in the podcast. I apologize. Behind me, is that the right side? Yep. You see a purple jacket that's hanging on the wall. Originally, that jacket was not there. There was a hook. It was driving everybody insane.
AI put it
there. So my wife came in and put a jacket there. Everyone calmed down, except for one thing. We have been suffering from a never-ending series of memes of what could be on the wall instead of the jacket.
That's been wonderful.
Ever since.
Yeah.
My favorite so far was the portal holes with the hot and the cold.
Yeah, that was a good one. That was a request.
I am going shopping for removable hooks for next week's show. I guarantee you there will be more than one hook behind me, and there will be nothing on them.
Whatever it's worth, I usually
I love everything about that.
45 degrees away.
I love the crazy that the Discord brings to
Isn't
this.
Isn't it great? I love it too. Things. Yeah.
You thought you were the weird one in the room, and then you get outnumbered by them.
I do wish you would use your superpowers for good, but I'm just glad you're using them. It's okay.
Yes, it's exactly.
You know, at least you're exercising them. It's good.
This is why you want to join the club. I'm telling you, that Discord is so much fun. So much fun.
So much fun.
Yeah.
The response to me appearing off my boomboggle trip is just like, you guys are nuts. So hilarious.
I mean, to varying levels of technical acumen or like Photoshop ability or whatever you want to say.
Some serious Photoshop skills here.
Here's Al 9000 in the background. Yeah. Join the club, kids. Stuff. You're missing the fun. Yeah. That's all I can say.
Everyone listening to this from the front has got to hear the show twice.
Yeah. Sorry.
Okay. No, it's good. I wish you were, you know, like I'm like Richard would enjoy this conversation.
We covered Microsoft's earnings last week. Quite a good quarter for them.
Warned and threatened there would be more.
Going to keep happening.
I left out some of the smaller guys. You know, Spotify, Nintendo. Actually, we might talk about Nintendo.
But they had a good Amazon, year too. Right? Yeah,
they're doing okay. So, Amazon by revenue is the biggest company in our business. I know they're in the top 10, but as far as like market cap, they're not. I don't think even in the top five, but they're up there. Obviously,
the gross revenues are crazy, but the margins are small.
Yeah, it's about right. Amazon is not predictable. It's really interesting because depending on factors that are just beyond the scope of understanding, because they have such a big physical presence and digital presence, it's the mix of that is just crazy. They'll have a quarter, they make $150 billion and they had a slight loss or $1 billion, you know, net income, which is profits, right? This year was just gangbusters. So $10.6 billion on revenues of $170 billion. Those were better than expected, a gain of 14% year over year, yada, yada, yada. There was one thing I wanted to pull out in here. I think it was related to AWS. AWS revenues were $24.2 billion, up 11.7%. It may not be the first time, but honestly, that didn't strike me as being particularly good. I mean, I know it's up 11%, but if you compare this to
Azure or Google Cloud,
that's what I'm saying. So if you look at like intelligent cloud, I don't have that number. Of course, I'll bring up the topic, but not be ready to talk about it. That's how I work. I don't think this compares as favorably to, Microsoft's earnings as has been the case in the past, right? So one of the big stories there has always been that, let me just type in this actual thing, Paul. Has always been that Azure growth has been going down, over time as it would. And those comparisons have not been, I can't find it. I'm sorry. I can't type and talk. That's the problem. Those revenues as far as growth have been going down, which is, you know, I think partially explains the AI thing, but Azure revenues, we don't know exactly, but Azure is the primary component probably of that intelligent cloud business. That's been going gangbusters, right? That's their biggest business by revenue. They often see the biggest growth. So for this most recent quarter, I finally found it, sorry, it was $25.9 billion, it was bigger. And that's, again, that's not all Azure, but the thing is, you got to remember, Microsoft's cloud business also includes a big chunk of productivity and business processes and a small chunk of more personal computing. But, you know, it's not all of the business, but I think it's fair to say, I mean, and then as Azure becomes more important because of AI, that just gets bigger and bigger. I would put it.
I wonder if part of the problem with all of this is hobby that these large corporations have now in consuming their actual business units.
Yes.
They construct these artificial things to hide business units performing.
Well, and AI is the most artificial of all those.
Predictable.
Yeah.
Right?
You can't look at Microsoft and say, okay, then, you know, what percentage of this was derived directly or indirectly from AI?
Mm-hmm. I didn't even have a problem with that just because there's so many different places that LLMs are showing inside of the company.
Right.
But
right.
The fact that you don't know how much Azure actually grew, much less how much Office 365 grew versus how Dev.
Well, we know it as a percentage, actually. But what we don't know is the actual. And again, it's squishy because.
How much of that is dynamics? You know, are intentionally hiding weaker business units, and it's not special.
Well, okay. Also,
this is Alphabet. Like Alphabet exists to conceal the fact that Google only makes money on search. Like that's all that is.
Okay, but Microsoft is also hiding profitable and gangbuster businesses because they're legacy. So, for example, it's very possible that their servers business is still fantastic. I'm not saying it's better than Azure, but that's something they're not going to want to promote.
They don't want to admit that volume license agreements work well.
Yeah, exactly.
Certain classes of product because they want monthly revenue on everything.
Well, except that, but again, the proof is in the pudding. In this case, what I mean is the proof is in what Microsoft does, which is turn everything into volume licenses, right? Or subscription services, essentially.
Well, I mean, they're turning them into monthly subscription services as opposed to annual volume licenses.
or there's one-time purchases every X number of years, which gets stretched out further and further, right?
Well, and it, I mean, for a long time and to this day, if you're buying dev tools for your company, you're buying manually.
Right.
Still. Oh. It used to be called MSDN subscriptions, but they're not.
Since we're talking about this, this is a little off topic, but no, it isn't. It's earnings. Last week, we talked about Microsoft earnings. I mentioned that they'd given a specific number for the installed base of the consumer version of Microsoft 365, but not the commercial version. And, you know, every once in a while, they do either or. Actually, they usually do the consumer, but often they'll throw in the consumer. And I sort of said, based on what I know about the business, I bet it's somewhere in the 350 million range. It's 400 million. It's actually better than I thought.
Nice.
And someone asked them about that because I think it maybe came up in the post-earnings conference call. Someone asked, and then the follow-up was like, well, how do you keep this thing growing? And they literally said, we hit these artificial ceilings on those licenses. There's only so many seats we can sell. And, you know, let's pretend, I don't know the number, but back in the 300 million range, they had kind of hit that ceiling. And what they do is they expand the licenses a bit. So they started introducing things like frontline workers, right? Where you have these like less expensive tiers that will generate more seats. And they, as of now, they literally admitted this, that's over. Like there's no more growth to be had there. But I had sort of described AI, like in this case, Copilot for Microsoft 365, as essentially another tier. It's really, I know it's an add-on, but it's another way to get more users, you get more money per user, right?
Yeah, substantially too.
And that's what they said. They said, look,
they do have giant overhead for providing that service.
Yeah. So here's my prediction. Next quarter or a year from now, whenever it is in the future, what we're going to see is not the number of commercial seats anymore, because that's not going to change too much. It's going to be the average money they earn per user, because that's going to go up because of AI, right?
Yeah. But and I feel for organizations like Directions on Microsoft and the other analyst group, because how do you compare business unit over business unit year over year when they literally shuffle the deck every time they
write? I would throw myself into that victim pool, if you don't mind. Yeah. I'd like be part of the class action because I write about these earnings every quarter and it is.
Well, and you could write about the overall earnings because the SEC has pretty strict rules about that.
No, right? but I'm looking for these same things. Like they've literally made it impossible. And I'm not positive. My theory about this is that I don't know who started it, but all these companies are getting vaguer and vaguer and vaguer. And I think they're waiting for some regulator to say, probably the SEC, to say, excuse me, this is not what you're supposed to be doing. But no one's ever said anything. So they just, you know.
But the thing is, you don't protest if you don't have the solution. Like, I don't know how you fix this. You cannot tell a company you have to organize a particular set of business.
So I didn't talk about this early in the podcast, but I wrote a big article about Mozilla and how they'd come out and complaining about how the platform makers disenfranchise them and the many, many ways they do so. And I made a comparison to Apple and how Apple, people forget this, but Apple used to be called Apple Computer. You know, they're quite a diversified company today compared to that those days. And they are also quite a bigger company. But in doing so, I went back and I looked at older Apple earnings reports. Now, there was a time period 3-4 years ago where they stopped. They used to, up until very recently, would say, we sold this many iPhones, this many iPads, this many whatevers. And they would be very explicit about it. Now, they have many more products. Now they're talking growth. Microsoft does the same thing with Xbox, especially, right? They talk growth. They don't talk numbers because numbers don't look so good, right? This is another example of, you know, that thing happening, because when you go look at Apple's old earnings reports, my God, it's so explicit. Like the only thing I can compare it today is to Spotify, which is a much smaller company. Spotify today is very explicit. We have this many people using the service. This many are paying. This is how much we make from them. This is how much we make from them. And you can see what the business consists of. It's 100% transparent. It's beautiful.
Well, and one would argue maybe this has to be a shareholder rebellion, because I mean, one of the downsides to doing that is then you get activist shareholders who nitpick business units.
That's right.
Creates its own.
Yeah, what's Carl Icahn doing right now? Is he still around? Yeah. Could he mix the pot up a little bit somewhere?
But one would argue that these obfuscation strategies are about managing investor relations, because it just gives them nothing to complain about. You don't know.
And it worked, right? Part of Microsoft's, this is the 10 plus years of endless cloud, Azure, got them to the second biggest company in the world. And not talking about these legacy businesses, which no one who is investing in this company wants to be reminded of. We want to hear about the future and the
potential. It doesn't matter how many billions those business units are making.
Yep, no one cares.
He wants to hear about it.
That stinks.
Anyway, so you still comply with the reporting rules while obfuscating the business.
This
speaks to the reporting rules are actually about PR, right? They are the investor relations story.
Okay, so I have to be honest. I actually don't know what the legal requirement is for these companies, but based on how I've seen things go, they are probably adhering to the letter of the law or regulation, I guess, but not necessarily to the, you know, the we're doing this for a reason. The idea is your business consists of these components. They are all performing to some different level. By being transparent as a publicly owned company, legally required, you are giving investors the data they need to know whether they want to invest
in the company or not. Make an informed decision of investing.
So that's shifted a bit to, if we do like a dog and pony show and Wall Street gets excited and drives up the share price, our investors aren't going to care if the products are real or bad or terrible.
Now you get to the other schism, which is the institutional investor versus the individual investor. And the institutional investor, if they want to know more, they pick up the phone.
Right.
They get to puncture stuff. So they're not complaining. The guys with the clout at the SEC, the big dollar investors, they're not complaining because when they want to know more, they can. But they're really enjoying not letting the individual investors know much.
Once you're Microsoft, Apple, I don't know. Do you think there's someone who could get on the phone and get numbers out of these guys? I think
if you're big enough. Because
do you think Amy Hood has like dinners at a steak restaurant?
Carl Icahn can always speed dial Tim Cook, I'm sure.
I think if you,
No, but I wonder how much he actually gets. I mean, you might get something as simple as an assurance. You could just something insider information like, oh, don't worry about it. I know we see these stupid reports in the press, but this product is doing great. Just don't worry about it.
It's a pretty risky thing to do is to use insider information like that. Look at Martha Stewart.
It's literally illegal.
She did jail time.
But
there's a difference between insider knowledge, like what's going to happen, and understanding numbers,
actual understanding of the business, right?
Who doesn't take Jamie Dimon's call?
Like you own some percentage of the company. I mean, arguably, you're legally,
exactly.
And you're clear as far as knowing how good that is.
My investors, right?
You're an owner.
The people that invested in my organizations that I can invest in you demand more knowledge.
Right. Well, we're getting less knowledge. I mean, it's just the way it is.
An accounting strategy.
Yeah. This is not the reason, but I would also say that, you know, Microsoft was early to the diversification game, right? Office, server, on and on we go. Apple late to that game. Google late to that game. Now these companies are diversified. Even Google, which earns 70% of the revenues from ads, has businesses generating actual revenues and, you know, a more complicated product portfolio. I guess once you get to a certain size from the number of products or services, whatever you have, it does become a lot more difficult. Spotify makes one thing, right? They sell two versions of it, but it's one thing.
But I brought up to get to the meta conversation because we don't know how they make money.
No, we don't. And that's why I think I wrote something to that effect. I hope I did in the notes something about, where is it? Yeah, how.
I mean, exactly. It isn't going to be advertised. Like, that's the presumption here, right? That they suddenly
it is advertising. I mean, Meta and Google are neck and neck for advertising. So, yeah, it is. It is.
Okay.
Actually, you know what? I wrote about this. I'm sure I put something in here.
Yeah,
$38.7 billion in revenues from advertising, which is 96.5%.
You thought Google had a problem.
Yep. But you know what? Reality Labs is bringing up the rear, a billion in revenues, but a net loss of $4.6 billion on revenues of $1 billion. I don't know why I'm laughing.
Sounds like the old Xbox business.
It really is. Yes, it is. 2.1 daily active users, 3.0 billion monthly active users. I'm not sure if I know of another company that actually measures both of those things. But okay.
Usually you only roll out those numbers when they're stunning.
Exactly.
And they are stunning.
Yeah. So they are, I mean, I'd have to do the legwork on this. I won't.
The great thing with the Meta MAU is that it includes WhatsApp. It includes Instagram.
That's like saying Apple has a devices and blah 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 business. Okay, right. Great. Does that mean, and they have so many, like they actually said our user base surpassed, I think it was 2 billion active devices or whatever.
Right.
Okay. But does that include every pair of AirPods? You know, because if it does, not so impressive. You know, if you're talking iPads, iPhones, and Macs, okay, that's impressive. I think it's 2.2 billion actually in Apple's case. Speaking of which, Apple, right? Not doing so horribly. Although, interestingly, you know, you hear these numbers, almost 40 billion of net income. On revenues of almost 120 billion, you're like, geez, what could you complain about? Well, here's the problem: those revenues are flat year over year; they didn't grow.
Yeah,
that's a problem, and that's why Apple, which has to date had nothing to say about AI, is suddenly talking about AI, baby. They don't want you to think about that; they want you to think about what's coming in the future,
coming new. And this is the going back to Uncle Satch's great move with the AI thing last year, just as cloud revenues were starting to flatten.
Yep. You think? Oh, the timing on that is exquisite. And look, let's face it, whatever anyone thinks about Vision Pro, that's not going to be their next growth engine. So
it's a great distraction too. It's nice to see people lining up for Apple products again like that. If you're that PR team, you're happy.
Look, they have a huge and healthy ecosystem. Leo mentioned this early in the show. They'll get the UI on this right. You know, we were talking about the goofiness of having to go to like a text-based interface to get stuff done with AI and how that's starting to transform a little bit. Today, Richard, there was an announcement from Microsoft about the one-year anniversary of the Copilot stuff.
Right.
And one of the new features, which is in a Super Bowl ad, is that you can take a picture that it generates and then click on things to say, not this, or move this here. And rather than having to type that correction, which can be very lengthy. And I my kids didn't learn how to type in cursive. I mean, I think most people can type on a keyboard on a phone now better than they can on a real keyboard.
Right.
So it's Apple will, that's where Apple's contribution, I think, will be in the user experience of AI. We'll see.
I'm excited. It is interesting.
Yeah, so that's okay. That's everybody.
All right, quickly do some Xbox. We're running out of time, so we want to make sure there's room for brown stuff.
Oof. Okay. Well, I think at sometime in the past, we talked about how physical media for video games was disappearing from stores like Best Buy. Microsoft, part of their layoffs recently, was getting rid of the team that actually is responsible for the physical media stuff. It's happening in Europe now. There was a report European retailers are getting rid of this as well. Nintendo earnings are later in the show here a little bit, but as part of that earnings, one of the little figures or facts they pulled out of their earnings report was the percentage of people buying software digitally versus in physical format. It's over 50% digital now. So even on a system like that, where, it's not the future, it's the present, right? So no big surprise. Well,
if it's happened to Nintendo, everybody else was ahead of them. Nintendo moves slowly on this sort of thing.
And their audience doesn't care. I mean, they're kind of the Apple of the video game space, I think, in some ways. It's kind of a contorted comparison, but just live with it. The big controversy of the past week was actually with Xbox. There's been a lot of rumors of Microsoft bringing first-party games, meaning Microsoft Studio games, and that would include today, Bethesda, Activision, Blizzard, et cetera, platforms.
Isn't there an event this week? Isn't Spencer?
So, so what happened was there was one too many rumors, and Brad and I had this conversation. We're like, look, these guys have got to come clean. And like 10 seconds later, Phil Spencer got on Twitter/X and said, guys, we have a strategy. We have an announcement. We've been planning it for a while. It will be next week, right? And there's been some criticism of that because at that point it's like, well, why don't you just tell us now? But my sources are telling me that this event was actually planned for the end of February. This has been planned for a while, and they're actually moving it up because of all the
rumors. They're probably needing to get some signatures. Like, that noise also helped them push some contracts through.
Yeah, I think what had happened was, the way these rumors happen is that Microsoft can keep a secret sometimes, but once you start expanding the group of people who know what you're doing, because you're talking to partners, news gets out, and suddenly it's like Halo's coming to PS5 or the new Indiana Jones game or Starfield or whatever the thing might be.
Yeah, the noise begins. But now you get the lagger. So now you move up the event date, and then you also go to the guys who are dragging their feet. It's like, you're going to miss it. If you don't sign, it almost doesn't matter. Like, it becomes beneficial for Microsoft too.
Two things to this. One is, when I think about what Microsoft could or could not be doing, or could or could not be talking about, I don't care about this in the slightest. Yeah. As an Xbox gamer, this does not impact me at all, except in a positive way, which I'm going to get to.
Ask me how the PC Master Race feels.
Okay. What I care about is, you spent $69 billion on Activision. What are you doing with it? What? Like, come on. It's February. Like, so I actually think this event was mostly about that. And my guess was, I'm just guessing, this is, I'm projecting here, but my guess is they were going to pull up and one more thing at the end of it and right. say, oh, and one more thing, we're bringing Starfield to PS5. Good night, everybody. And, you know, it was going to be one of those little things. So now everyone's all in a bundle over this. But here's the deal. And it bothers me that there are still people in the world who don't get this. Xbox is not the same as it used to be. Richard alluded to this earlier. The old Xbox, the one that was about a console that lost money all the time. That business could not exist. They, under Phil Spencer, have expanded this thing to include a wide range of products and services across platform, want to do that Microsoft thing, meet gamers where they are. And a lot of gamers are on rival platforms. Microsoft has never and will never make money on a console. Microsoft would be better off not making consoles. If it bothers you that Xbox games are going to be on PlayStation 5 or whatever, you're not paying attention. This is how this thing thrives, not just survives, but thrives. You just, as like an individual gamer, for example, I Call of Duty guy for a long time. Two of the big things that happened in that life cycle were that for the first most years, I would go online and play against people on Xbox. That's all I could play with. But at some point, they expanded that audience so we could do crossplay with, and then I could play against people who are on PlayStation. And that meant the number of people I could play against was three times as big all of a sudden. And then a couple of years ago, they added PCs too. Now, of course, with PCs, you have to make sure they're using a controller. Wouldn't be fair if they were using a keyboard and a mouse. But the point is that benefited even like this notion that bringing a game to another platform, which is sort of this, is somehow going to make things worse for you as an Xbox fan is ridiculous. This is expanding the ecosystem you love. This is like saying, I loved REM until they became successful. You know, like, I know we do this. It's human. It's very common. But the truth is, if you love Xbox, this is how it succeeds. Period. Yeah. Xbox is not a console. It was never successful as a console. It is becoming successful as a much bigger ecosystem that targets gamers wherever they are. Cloud services are cool. Streaming is fine. But honestly, bringing those things directly to the console natively is, or PC or whatever the platform, Nintendo, whatever.
No, it's create the umbrella and ultimately own the relationship with the customer. That's really
what they're working. That's what it is. And, you know, we'll see what they say, but that's the plan. Okay. We have new Xbox Game Pass titles for February. I don't have to go into that too deeply, but I will say Resident Evil 3. I did play Resident Evil 2 for a little while, got tired of the puzzles. I don't know enough about the series to know if that ever changes or if that's the whole thing. I don't know, but hopefully that changes. I'm going to take a look at it. I've always been intrigued by Resident Evil. I've never been able to take advantage of it, or you know, until fairly recently because I was an Xbox guy. And then we have Nintendo also earnings. I put it here just because I wanted to talk about the number of Switches they've sold. Right. So this company has now sold basically 140 million of these things. It is the tied for the number one selling video game hardware of all time is tied between the Nintendo DS and the PS2. Wow. So they're basically in second place. This is the second most successful video game hardware / Nintendo hardware ever made. This thing should have fallen off a cliff. It is going down, of course. But honestly, they've stretched. I mean, they've done a good job of midstream Switch Lite, Switch OLED. We thought there was going to be a Switch 4K. Maybe that's what the next thing will really be. Which is expected this year, but a lot of good, you know, big game releases. This is a thing like these guys have tight, like you just don't see data like this. They have a game that has sold 20 million units, like one game. Yeah, 12 million, 7 million. There are 17 Nintendo titles that have sold over 1 million units so far this fiscal year. Yeah. And there are 7 third-party games that have sold that many. Like, are you kidding me? Yeah. Oh, and it was 40%. I'm sorry. It's 46% digital, not 56,
it's just a different league. Like, it's easy to ignore Nintendo because they're not flashy.
Yeah,
and they aim at the kid.
I compared them to Apple.
It honestly, is a cash cow.
Yeah, the better comparison is Disney. They hit at an audience that is not just young, but also older people who think young or whatever, you know, the kind of living the younger lifestyle, whatever it is.
Not just young, but childish too.
The child at heart kind of crowd, whatever. They've got a special thing going. You can't just, you know, there's nothing you can say there. It's amazing. So they're doing great.
Awesome.
And good for them because they don't keep people with the Xbox, because if they did, screw them. no, I'm just kidding. There you go. I think that's everything, right?
It's a beautiful thing. There is a rumor that there's a new Switch coming maybe next year with a OLED screen.
I think they're going
to big screen, 8 inches, and
hopefully, the big thing they should do is the backward compatibility thing. If they have a forward movement story for existing customers,
incredible,
it's going to be fantastic.
Yep. Not the Nintendo
way.
What
if they started to do it like? I know. But that's the rumor, though. They've talked about it. They've said, look, one of our goals is to move these people forward. There's a lot of AI stuff going on now. I don't know if you heard of it, but one of the things is upscaling the quality of existing games. What if a Switch user could take their existing title and have it look better on these new consoles, right? Which is something very common elsewhere. But
Xbox did that.
Kind of new to Nintendo. I think that would be huge for those guys.
All right, let's take a little time out as we get ready for the back of the book. We are so glad Richard Campbell has arrived, which means there will be a whiskey pick. You're listening.
Yeah,
to
I threw his thing in there just in case I was going to mention the Runaz pick, but
let Richard do his own plug-in. You're listening and watching to Windows Weekly. Back of the book time, tips and picks from Paulie Thurrott, little Paulie Thurrott.
I'm curious what you guys think about this. Richard offered me this some time ago when it was still kind of a private thing. But Blue Sky, which is the most Twitter of the Twitter alternatives, is now available for everyone. So anyone can sign up if you want to go check that out. If you miss the old Twitter, it's going to feel very comfortable. It's a complete rip off.
It looks a lot like
that's kind of interesting.
The idea was, this was Jack Dorsey funded this before he left.
Yeah.
Because the idea was to make an open, federatable Twitter clone. And as yet, they haven't.
Well, Dorsey was fighting with his board, right? I mean, that's why.
So is this open and or federatable?
It's got a protocol, AT Proto, which is very similar to the Mastodon protocol, the Fediverse.
Interesting.
ActivityPub protocol. They have said, with the fact that they're out of invite, that they're going to start publish an API and allowing people to create their own Blue Sky servers. It hasn't happened yet, but it's there.
That's cool.
One of the arguments about the real failure of Twitter here is that the people who ran the company never really understood it. It was the users that shaped it. And so what Dorsey's into, what he's really talking about here is, let's go back to what really actually made Twitter successful, which is put an API out, see what people make.
So I can't speak to the success or lack of success of Twitter as a business before Elon Musk took it over per se, but I will say, successful or not, there was something that made Twitter special and also unique. And we've kind of talked about this notion of governments, big and small, having a one place to go and say, hey, look, there's a disaster, or there's a fire, there's a hurricane or whatever.
Were they there because the press were there, or were the press there because they were there? I don't know the answer to that.
In the end, it kind of doesn't matter. Everyone was there, you know?
Yes. So what does it take to get everyone there? And you know, Dorsey's argument is it's the open API, which, I mean, eventually they closed off.
It's tough because there's inertia. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of people have left Twitter, but I think a lot more have not. Well, and then
the
I'm
whole
sure
thing here, now that you open an API, is I can build all the bridges that I built back in the Twitter days.
Okay.
Right. There's an awful lot of organizations that publish on Twitter that don't even really know they have Twitter account because it actually comes through their RSS.
It gets complicated, though, between Threads and Blue Sky and
That's
Mastodon.
That's the problem. You've got this big diaspora. They're all over the place. Yeah. I still like Mastodon best. The quality of the conversation there is the best. It's not the largest. Threads is probably the largest competitor right now, but that's owned by Meta.
Mostly, but that's because they migrated the graph from Instagram, which was a brilliant thing.
Yeah. Right.
That was a very brilliant thing because nobody wants to build a graph again. They're done.
I'm somewhat rooting for Blue Sky. There's a lot of good stuff going on there. It is an open protocol. Yeah. But Mastodon's there. It does it. And, you know, we have our own Mastodon instance. So
I suppose there probably are fans of Meta out in the world. If there are, seek help. But, you know, no one wants to see yet another Meta service. But then again, you know, you want something like, you know, something that's not as horrible as Twitter is today. So slightly less horrible, I guess, is better than horrible. you know, Threads does have 130 million users now, whatever that means. I mean, this is always suspect, but you know, as a publisher, I need a place, you know, people have to be there. So,
but it, and therein lies the thing is like the OpenAI AI might be the thing. If the community rallies around it and builds bridges for all those things that used to be done by Twitter, so that folks don't have to learn, the folks that don't care about the social media part, it's like you need to broadcast, this is a good way to broadcast it, and you need no additional effort, the API will make a difference. Is it a flashback to 2008? Yeah. You know, and maybe so, it's irrelevant now. I don't know the answer to that.
And this is Mastodon. By the way, Paul, thank you, because Paul's very active on twit.social. He's always posting there.
No, I like it a lot, too, actually.
It's a lot like Twitter in functionality. I think it's a little more functional than Blue Sky. It has edit and so forth. But
I will say, and you know this, right? I mean, there is a benefit to it being smaller.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
In some ways, you're speaking to a more engaged crowd of people who are enthusiastic, perhaps, or, you know, about whatever the topic might be. Like, there is some advantage to that, right?
Yeah, I agree. I'm a fan, but I have, you know, a little dog in this hunt.
Yeah, well, you run the server that I am using, so I am also a fan.
You know, I like the advanced web interface, which looks just like TweetDeck, and is a really great way to kind of follow a lot of content. I think it's pretty good. I can't.
Yeah, I did too.
I don't need anything more than this. Let's put it that way.
So from this is not maybe important for individuals, but the one thing I would like is a single interface where I could post to all of these things. Yeah. And I don't mean like auto post. I mean, I'll make a joke on Twitter, you know, and obviously I think I'm hilarious and I would like to share this joke with everybody. But I would have to go and copy and paste it or something into each. I mean, like, I'd like to just be, you know, putting it out there everywhere.
The promise of federation, and Threads, by the way, is federated with the Fediverse, with ActivityPub, is that somebody could follow you on these other platforms and see that joke on all the platforms. But
the problem, as you know, is that the biggest of these services, Twitter, is actively blocking that kind of stuff, right? They don't want people to do that. Right. And I do understand that from a business perspective. Also from just being an evil perspective. But, you know, from like for me, I just...
Stone Age thinking.
Yeah. Yep. So anyway.
Okay.
We have choices now. I guess the tip is go look at them. You know, you were probably pushed into Threads whether you wanted it or not. But Blue Sky is something you should at least look at. And now
it's easy to get there. And and if you like the conversation, participate in it. Do you loathe building another social graph? Yeah. God.
I know. It's awful. I mean, it's awful. All right, okay. So app pick of the week is Mozilla. We talked a lot about Mozilla earlier in the show because Firefox is circling the drain. They've been trying to come up with other products and services, most of which are now in free and paid versions. One of the things they've had for a while is something called Firefox Monitor. This is one of the services you get through, you know, password managers do this, where they look for you on the dark web and see if your accounts have been compromised, whatever. But
I think Monitor also promises to remove.
So that's the thing. So now they have a paid version. They've renamed it to Mozilla Monitor.
Right.
And because in the past, you could get this report and say, okay, neat. Now I got to go
do
the hard legwork. Right.
Right.
So if you pay them, it's a little expensive, honestly. It's too bad. It's $14.99 a month or I think it's $8.99 if you pay for a year.
Yikes.
They will actually do most of that work for you. Now, if you have to change your password, obviously that's something you have to do. But like a good password manager, I think Bitwarden probably does this. They give you a link where you go right to that place, right? You don't have to go hunt around on the service to find out where to change your password. So they'll automate this for you. They'll keep it going in the background forever, as long as you're paying, and then they'll help you. You know, go make this happen. So, if you feel bad about Mozilla, if you support Mozilla, this is not the only paid service they have. They have a VPN. They have a paid version of Pocket, which is a service I actually use, which I love. They have some other things. But this is, you know, we've been talking a lot about this security stuff and accounts and online accounts. This is right in there. I mean, it's definitely something to look at. I'm sure there are other services, including, like I said, password managers. If you have a password manager you're paying for, see what they offer along these lines, if anything.
Good. Now I think we should talk about the podcast pick of the week with our Tauranga native, Richard Campbell.
Glad to be here. This is actually a show I recorded back in at Ignite. This is, I talked to Brendan Burns, you know, the original architect of Kubernetes, who worked for Google at the time, and then moved over to Microsoft. And, you know, I think he doesn't want to be typecast any more than anybody else wants to be in terms of, you know, talking to me about Kubernetes again. What was fun about the conversation with him more than anything was just this my bigger thinking around being cloud native, like just the fact that you don't think about what machine you're running on and how you're distributing, that you can scale up and down dynamically. So there's a lot more work being done. If anything, because I've held on to the show since November, and we've had announcements like Aspire and others that have really spoken to the cloud native movement is growing, and the way we build software is evolving because of that. And certainly Brendan's been a part of that. There's a subtext, if you listen to the show closely, you'll hear that we're also talking about how he's coaching Microsoft to be a better cloud native customer. That how they approach open source and how they build software, because he does come from that world. And so it's very much part of his role is to insert himself into various teams and help them to do the right things there. There are some underlying tools that have been coming out of Microsoft, various teams, some of Marcinovich's stuff as well. Radius and Dapper, we speak about specifically, both really great tools that are more about helping you, as they say, fall into the pit of success when it comes to things in the cloud. So, he does mention Aspire at the end, which was brand new. We were talking about Ignite, but it's evolved since then. And over on .NET Rocks, we did a show with David Fowler. And he talked about that
Aspire,
same
thing. Aspire, like the crop, what do you call it? The cloud native thing that Microsoft's doing?
That's right. Cloud native tooling, right? Yeah. It's like, you don't want to call it a framework because it doesn't deploy. It's really part in your development environment as you build with Aspire. It tends to help you make the choices that work well cloud natively.
Like a best practices telemetry. Wizard.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. A best practice wizard wouldn't be a bad description of it, actually.
Sorry. That just triggered a memory. I was like,
you hit it. That's a good one.
And now, let's go to New Zealand for our brown liquor pick of the week.
And it's only a few distilleries in New Zealand, although the number is beginning to grow. And this is one of them. This is the Cardrona, their particular edition called the Full Flight Solera. Great name. So the Cardrona Valley is way down the South Island. Right now, I'm sort of mid-North Island. I'm in the northeast corner near Tauranga. Cardrona is down deep in the South Island, up in the Canterbury Plains, which is near Queenstown. You'd fly into Queenstown and then you'd drive a little north up into the highlands. Close to the Wakana Lake, there is the distillery there. The lady behind this thing, her name is Desiree Reed. She's been in whiskey for a couple of decades. This particular facility was only set up in 2015. They are buying their barley in the Canterbury Plains, so it is New Zealand barley, sprouted and milled right there on site. They have their own grinding tools. They do a long ferment with classic brewer's yeast, so 70 hours. It's a very long time to do fermentation. Their stills are, as they call them, unusually small. and they're small enough, their name. So their low wine still is only 2,000 liters, and it's named Roaring Meg. Because they, you know, those low wine stills, the initial ones are noisier. They're doing their first separations off of the wash and stuff. So it can be a bit rackety. And then Gentle Annie is the high still that takes it up into the high 70s% and it's a 1200 liter still. They also make some gins and things and so forth. So several of the stills they have there, but they're column stills. So we won't talk about this. We only care about the pot still. And they have several other additions. This particular one, I think, is their best, the Full Flight Solera. It has spent 7 years in bourbon and sherry casks. I'm pretty sure at least six of those were just American bourbon casks. You tend to finish in Oloroso sherry. You don't want to spend too much time there. And it's bottled at cask strength, 62.8%.
Is this so it? That's, the Full Flight bourbon, or is that
this
it? Or,
is, no, this
that's
is,
not it.
Architecturally, this is closer to a Scottish whiskey, except for that part where it's not made in Scotland.
Right.
What about the peatiness, though?
No peat at all. Yeah, that's not a thing here. You know, they've got plenty of wood to do their drying. So, yeah, it is very much I would put this in there around the Abenanth, yeah. Except that it's very young. It's only a 7 year. It has no age appellation at all because it's just not old enough.
And does that make it, is that more bitter, or is that
it tends to be a little harsher, a little more heady in the alcohol side, not that sort of deep richness you get from having more time. It's quite cool down in the Canterbury Plain too, so like they're getting more Scottish kind of conditions there. It doesn't get as cold, that cold in the winter, but it does get pretty cold. But they haven't been around long enough to really make an older whiskey. So this is only a 7-year-old. And that's just not that much time for what they're commanding. Let's call it a boutique whiskey. That's the kind phrase for it. $175 New Zealand. That's about $100 US. And, you know, when you think about what you can buy for $100 US, like that'll land you a Dalmore 12.
Yeah.
You know, actually less.
But, it's kind of fun that you can travel with your whiskey, you know? I mean, that's kind of neat. It has a story.
These different parts of the world are all experimenting, right?
Yeah.
And yeah,
also, you can travel to your whiskey, as Richard does. No, seriously.
Or you can go to bring the whiskey.
Those are fun trips.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah. Of course, yeah.
But, and I did go past Pukino on the way down, which is the Kiwi whiskey I talked about last time I was here back in September. It's becoming a shtick now. Next week I'm going to be in Sydney, so I'm just going to have to find an Australian whiskey, preferably have one in hand. I didn't have time to grab this one because I was racing to make the tail end of the show, but otherwise I would have grabbed one.
No one minds if you're not holding it in your hand. We believe you.
Yeah, but I do like the days when I can hold up the bottle
cool.
Taste it in front of you. Like those are good days, right?
Yeah.
But that's not one of these days. But, you know, here I am in New Zealand. And yes, there is New Zealand whiskey. It is made very much of the Scottish style. This is in many ways approached like a Speyside. It just hasn't had the years. So it comes out a little younger, a little different style. But otherwise, they sort of matched their approach. Pure barley, good water, simple aging, and used barrels because the Scots are cheap.
Nice.
I'm impressed they got Oloroso down here. That's a long way to bring a barrel, and those barrels are big. Right? Those are the big 600-700-800-liter barrels. Like it's not easy to ship a sherry cask. Where the Americans, they're 200s. They're little, so they're much easier to move around, and they're plentiful because Americans will only use them once.
Right.
Richard Campbell, runasradio.com. That's where you'll find his podcasts. That and .NET Rocks, and he joins us every week. Even if he has to drive 1,000 miles and drive another 1,000 more, he is
about 140 kilometers, wasn't that?
But who's counting?
I did have to cross the Katmais, and it was a bit foggy. Every so often, and by the way, the steering wheel's on the wrong side of the car.
Time
you see me, every time you see me hit the windshield wipers, there's no reason. It's because the turn stops on the wrong side of the car too.
Right.
Yeah, you know what I find really disconcerting? It's not so bad going down the left side of the road, but when you merge onto the highway,
rotaries are horrific.
You're going backwards, and it's so
It feels unnatural. That's why I like to have a stick shift because it forces you to pay attention.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you don't want to get complacent,
hand, which is its own thing.
Yeah, don't get complacent driving on the other side of the road.
The entrance into Tauranga, there's a couple of the Greentons right nearby, and so there is a 3-lane. Six in out rotary you've got to go through. I've never been in that center lane
because I've
never come up. Like, no way out.
It's like the Place de la Concorde.
No, I went to the outer lane. I did my three pass. The 1, 2, 3 out. Okay, I made it one pass. Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty good. I think there's still people driving around the Arc de Triomphe, which is not the wrong way, but is still one of the more complicated.
So hard to get into.
Rotaries in the world.
Just
can't get out.
There's one in Paris that goes the other way for some reason.
I think maybe that is the Arc. Actually, it is.
The Arc
I think it's the Arc
Triomphe. Yeah, it's counterclockwise.
I think it is. I'm sorry. That's right. Yeah. It is backwards.
Yes.
God bless the French.
The French.
That's beautiful.
Love the French.
But I will, now that we're wrapping up, the next thing I am going to do is get in a shower because it has been a few hours.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you made it there safely. I cannot believe that you showed up for this. I would never have done this for you guys. So wait, after that much, I get wrecked traveling here. It's 4 hours during the day.
I slept, you know, it's just, well, 787 service. I slept well.
Like, I know, but still,
I feel pretty rested. I'm not that tired, but I do shower.
Paul Theroux, is it Theroux.com when he's not in Mexico City? No, he's even there in Mexico City.
Yeah, I'm there. Okay.
He's always at Theroux.com. His books are at leanpub.com, including Windows Everywhere and
the field guide to Windows 11. We do Windows Weekly every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1900 UTC. Live stream is at YouTube, youtube.com/twit. After the fact, shows are at twit.tv/ww or on YouTube. Paul has copies of the show at his website, therot.com. And, of course, you can always subscribe wherever you find your finer podcasts. Get a podcast client and subscribe. That's the best way to listen or watch. We have audio and video. Thanks, Paul. Thanks, sure. Richard. We'll see you in Sydney next week, Richard.
Yep. Sydney next week.
We'll see you in Mexico City next week, Paul. And we'll see you, you, dear listener, wherever you are. But I hope you'll be here on Wednesday for Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.
Hey, we should talk Linux. It's the operating system that runs the internet, but your game console, cell phones, and maybe even the machine on your desk. You already knew all that. What you may not know is that TwitNow is a show dedicated to it, the Untitled Linux Show. Whether you're a Linux pro, a burgeoning sysadmin, or just curious what the big deal is, you should join us on the Club Twit Discord every Saturday afternoon for news, analysis, and tips to sharpen your Linux skills. And then make sure you subscribe to the Club Twit exclusive Untitled Linux Show. Wait, you're not a Club Twit member yet? Well, go to twit.tv/clubtwit and sign up. Hope to see you there.